720 WGN. Happy Friday night, Chicago and beyond. John Hansen here until 1 in the morning on Saturday morning. Boy, Mr. Michael Heidemann across the glass, you're rolling us in here with some hot stuff here. What is this?
This is
just generic rock music?
The legendary band Def Leppard with Let It Go.
Oh, I like that. Just like your haircut here recently, Heidemann. How long are you going to grow that thing? You hippie?
You know, I've saved a lot of money on haircuts over my life, but never more in the last 6 months.
No, seriously, you came here, and you know, I see you fairly often, usually once a week or sometimes more than that. But it's been a little longer, and boy, you're just committed to this, aren't you?
I am.
Is there a moment when that dome is just going to be too big? I mean, because it's almost getting mullet-ish.
Ooh, yeah. Well,
like a full mullet, though.
I always have been a fan of 70s baseball, so I've been trying to go towards that route. But once it becomes the Superdome,
yes,
then I think I will like take it down a little bit.
All right, good.
Yeah,
it's getting a little long hair for you. So
well, your hair's looking good though.
Yeah, nice and short and crisp. My parents used to just sit me on the stool. I'm sure parents out there can relate. And because the other, I have two brothers, so there's three boys, and they would just line us up, boom, bada boom, bada boom, get the clippers out, ring, ring, ring.
Did they
done
put the bowl over the
yes
head and everything?
So
too?
I demanded the bowl. I wanted the bowl cut. Very popular when I was growing up. And split part just right down the middle, and they would, yep, my mom would put the bowl on top. But my brothers just got shaved all the way down, but I had to have a little style. So, yep, the bowl around, and that's how we got our haircuts.
Like a little Jonathan Taylor Thomas from Tool Time.
Right. Till I was 29 years old. That's how
wow
we did it. 312-91-7200. What's your hair like? Give us a call or text us. We got a lot of fun coming up. We do actually have a pretty packed show. So the weather is terrible. You've been hearing David Jennings. I'm sure he'll have a full forecast at 9:30. Terrible in the sense, I mean, our city still looks awesome, but it is downright cold, some 20 to 30 degrees below where we should be this time of year. And we had the snow on Halloween. Just saw Tommy Skilling on good old Channel 9 here in one of the monitors showing that before Monday night, we might end up with upwards of 3 inches of snow. Sunday night into Monday is when that's expected. That's one of the models.
And another model has a deep freeze coming in next week.
Great. So this is awesome. So I'm going to give you guys an opportunity. Thank you, David, for updating us. Feel free to chime in whenever, Mr. Jennings. I'm going to give you two options here to start the show. You can either stay in Chicago and drink your way through it. We're going to have someone on in just a little bit to talk about a really cool festival next week or a big event centered around rum. So if you're dreaming of the islands or you want to feel a little warmth in your belly, we're going to talk about that coming up. Also, the travel mom, Emily Kaufman, I've known her for years. She's really great, and she always has these really cool ways to get away from here. So you can either drink and stay here, or you can get the heck out of here. We're going to have her come on a little bit later on. She's got some little deals, and she also gives away vacations and all this stuff. So be sure to tune in for that, and we're going to be talking about that in the 10 o'clock hour. Other things on the agenda tonight. Mike, I can't wait to do this. We did this for the Chicago Fire at the beginning of last month, not the soccer team, for the anniversary of the actual Chicago Fire. We did this little, you know, we tried to resolve the mystery. You know, was it Mrs. O'Leary's cow? And I gave you all the firsthand accounts of what happened, what actually happened during the Chicago Fire. We're going to do that again. Not the Chicago Fire. We're moving on. We're doing something else.
We figured that one out.
We solved that one. What do we go with? The Gambler.
I think it was The Gambler.
The Gambler.
Yes.
Yeah, The Gambler set that fire. Go back on WGNRadio.com if you want more of that. But we are going to solve a mystery I had never heard of. It's a local mystery. It's not Chicago, but it is within a tank of gas drive. It's a fascinating mystery from the 1940s. And it is creepy, it is weird, and I really have no idea who done it or what done it. I don't want to give you too much more. You got to hang on. Not going to be too much longer till we solve this mystery. But we're going to East Central Illinois in the 1940s for this mystery. So we're going to solve that a little bit later on, too. Blockbuster Blake Stubbs is going to join us in the 11 o'clock hour, and we're going to be talking about a new Scorsese movie, and we want to talk about some top gangster films as well, so start thinking about that sort of stuff. Later on in the show, we'll do Today I Learned, you know, all the normal features that we have here on a Hambone Friday. I'm here the next 2 weeks, too, so you got to get used to it. That's a good way to say it. Get used to it. So I'm here till 1 a.m. I'm excited about that. I got to say, Mike Heideman, I had a bad omen for this show, though.
Oh, no. Why?
Yeah. You know how we have some candy roaming around here in little bowls? I opened up a little two-pack of Starburst, which is a perfect size, you know, just to satiate your little sugar tooth.
Mm-hmm.
My little sugar tooth. Two yellows.
Oh.
I mean, what?
That's not
what are the
right.
odds? Look, red is... categorically the best flavor of Starburst, in my opinion.
I go with pink, but I do like red.
Fine. Pink's a runner-up.
Mm-hmm.
Orange, fine. Yeah. I'll take an orange. Yellow is, sometimes if I get a red and a yellow, I'll just throw the, I don't even care, I'll just throw the yellow away. At least I got the red, I'll move on, or I'll just go steal some more of the two packs.
Mm-hmm.
But two yellows.
Yeah, that's just a piece of trash at that point.
Yeah, it's a 1 in 16 chance of getting two yellows. And here I am getting that. So I don't even know if there's any point in still doing the show, but we're going to. Quick commercial break, then more on WGN. 928 news coming up in just 1 minute, but Michael, nice job running back to the candy stash. You got one for David, one for Michael, one for me. We're going to open these on the count of three and reveal which one you got. By the way, a texter said that they went through their kids' candy stash and they got all doubles. The whole packet were doubles. All right, Michael, what'd you get?
And I opened it up. One of my favorites, pink.
Uh-huh.
The second one. One of John's favorite, a yellow.
Oh, God, pink yellow. David, what do you got over there?
Yellow and orange.
Yeah,
what's going on?
The bottom feeder. I at least got a pink. I got a pink and an orange, so the middle two. What the hell is happening?
They must be, like, overstocking the yellows. They really just
they're just
get rid
yeah,
of
they went through the reds, because the reds duplicate in one of the other flavor packs, too.
Mm-hmm.
So somewhere at the factory, they're like, oh, a lot of reds. Use too many. Give them the yellows.
More steam.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, give them more yellows.
Hey, man.
Oh, yeah,
that's probably more.
Mm-hmm.
Give me some more yellows.
Yeah. It's actually not a character he's playing. David's just getting ready for his newscast. That's how he does it. 720 WGN getting some funk in here at 9:46 on this Friday evening. Hey, I hope you are having a awesome either start to your weekend. If you're going to work and you're one of those folks that has to work on the weekend, I always hate, I love this job on a Friday night. Totally cool. But I think we've all had a job in our lives where we work on the weekend. Everyone else is gearing up for the weekend and you're the one that has to go to work. If that's you right now, I pity you, but you're going to get through it. Thanks for listening. 312-981-7200. If you'd like to join the conversation, I'm sure some folks might be traveling about the area too, maybe on a little road trip or just getting on by. Thank you so much for spending your Friday night with us. John Hansen here till 1 in the morning. Michael Heideman behind the producer's glass and David Jennings manning the newsroom until Roger Battis takes over in the next hour. By the way, we had a texter who completely agrees that two reds is the good way to go on Starburst. And we're talking about different flavors of Starburst. I happened to get two yellows earlier, which how? There should be quality control on that where someone... People are like, I can't believe he's still droning on about this. I'm going somewhere, I swear. So if I had to vote one out, I'd do the yellow for Starburst. Skittles, same thing. Yellow. They got me thinking, whether it's banana-flavored or lemon-flavored, out with the yellow of everything. Out with the yellow now and laters. Out with the yellow Jolly Ranchers. Just a boring flavor.
It is, and it's banana.
The banana ones are way worse. Like the Laffy Taffy banana. What are you doing?
That's a good point.
Why?
You know, somebody mentioned yesterday the love for grape jelly during like the 1950s, 60s, and 70s.
Okay.
And now every kind of candy company has their own version of grape, and it's never the right flavor of grape, and it's always boggled my mind.
Mm.
They can never land. Or watermelon, too.
Mm. Yeah, watermelon doesn't actually taste like watermelon.
It translates into like cough drops.
Tastes better than yellow, though. Like, what are we doing? Like, you got four flavors, and you're wasting a whole one on yellow. Does anyone like yellow? 312-981-7200, or banana. I know there's people out there that do, but each and every time. This is a roundabout way of getting to the next conversation. So I know Halloween's over, and Halloween felt like it went forever this year. I think it was because it was on a Thursday night. A lot of people went out the weekend before, so we talked about Halloween all that week. Then we had the whole week. But guess what? I'm going to extend the conversation for one little bit longer, because I've seen a couple stories come out. I always love seeing the Halloween costumes that are very in this year. What were the most creative ones? I don't really get into the dress-up thing too much at all, but it's fun to see what other people did. So I've got your best and worst Halloween costumes that I saw while scouring through internet stories of it. The best one, by far, comes out of Caledonia, Wisconsin. And it took three people to pull this one off. It is two people together as one dressed as the Titanic, the ship. It's this gigantic ship costume, maybe made of cardboard or whatever. There's the front of the picture, like that old costume where you're playing, where two parts of a horse, you're tied together. You know, one's the back end, one's the front end. It's like that, but with a ship. The third person is an iceberg. And they went around the neighborhood and they acted this out, the ship hitting the iceberg. And the reason why it was helpful having two people be the Titanic then is that because they reenacted the sinking and the ship splitting in half. And then the two halves going their own separate ways.
Okay, that's a whole lot of work.
That's a lot of work, but I got to give them credit. Now, before you all text in and remind me about how many people died on the Titanic and how I shouldn't make fun of it, it's been 115 years. Nope, 105 years, excuse me. Nope, 107. There we go, third try. So, yes, I understand, you know, we're sensitive enough. But that's a good costume. And it's historical. It teaches kids a lesson, you know, the reenactment of it. So if I was going to tell you what the worst costume was, and I'm not, what would your guess be?
Are you going?
And we're steering away from what Justin Trudeau did a bunch.
Okay,
I'm sure
okay.
People did that, and that's way worse.
That's
no,
what I, was
I don't know. They're all bad.
Mm-hmm.
But this one is. There's one person in history you don't dress your kid up like. Who is it? Heidemann. 1, 2, 3, go.
Well,
one person.
Adolf Hitler.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
I was going to go Stalin, but Hitler would be. Would be
no, Hitler's face is far more recognizable,
yes.
And it stands out. Let me guess. Someone did the mustache.
Jeez. Oh, of course. Oh, this is a horrific, hilarious story.
And they were going.
Was it an adult who did it to a child,
of course,
or was it an adult who did it themselves?
No, no. It's a kid.
An adult did it to their kid.
Yeah, I'm about to tell you the story. Stalin's bad. Mussolini. Any one of the Axis powers, although I guess Stalin was an ally, so okay. But any dictator, like, let's stay out of that realm.
Yeah.
Pol Pot,
mm-hmm.
Don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, any of those in those fascist dictators, no bueno.
Yeah, not really. You can't find that at Walgreens.
No, no. There's not a sexy Hitler costume for good reason. A Utah elementary school principal and teacher. They've been suspended for this, by the way.
Utah, too. Wow.
A student wore a Nazi costume with the mustache during the Halloween parade last week. Parents, so they paraded this kid about with the other kids. We did a parade in elementary school, too. Parents were shocked and horrified when the boy, who has not been publicly identified, donned a fake Adolf Hitler-esque mustache and a red armband with a swastika during the event at Creekside Elementary School in Kaysville. Two parents said that the student was doing... Oh, my gosh.
He was doing the Nazi
yes.
salute.
No.
Yes.
You can't even pass off as Charlie Chaplin then.
Well, so that's what the school said. So all these parents were complaining, and the principal said, I thought it was Charlie Chaplin. And the other one said, geez. What about the swastika on his arm?
Did that not give you a clue?
Like, how does this happen? There are
a couple of things.
Okay.
One.
Go.
People of a certain age are not familiar with American history and...
Really?
Yes. You would be surprised how many people are not, because of their youth and because maybe not enough time is spent...
So maybe
on some of the stuff in history.
This is an elementary school kid, so maybe the teachers or the parents are in their mid-20s, let's say.
Let me give you a quick example.
Okay.
Okay? If you want to stop someone from stealing your car and make it difficult for them, you know what you do? You buy one with a manual transmission. Are you following my
drift? Yes, yes, yes.
Okay?
But not knowing how to drive a car is...
Give a kid a dial phone. How many of them would know what to do?
Right. I guess what I'm saying is parents have to know that Hitler is bad. That's an early lesson.
It's stuff that doesn't necessarily, isn't always as front of mind.
Right.
With people, younger folk.
Yeah.
Okay? They don't necessarily have that awareness.
The saddest version of this story is that his parents, for some reason, are, you know, white nationalists or something like that, and they're trying to indoctrinate their child in that.
Exactly.
I don't think that's the case. I don't have anything evidence backing that up. I hope that's not the case, because then this no longer becomes a wacky story. It becomes a horrific, sad story. But look, this video and the images, they came about. People posted this all over to Facebook. They called it distasteful. The school district says now that they're like, oh, yeah, we shouldn't have let this kid march, literally, through.
Yeah, really.
So, they say that they're appalled, blah, blah, blah. Anyways, so there you go. A kid dressed up as Hitler in Utah for Halloween.
So, John, it's interesting that David made that point about people not knowing history and everything, because I think that the Utah family, it's crazy because
you spent some time in Utah, right?
I did. Huge fan. No, I'm just kidding. Okay. They're not fans of Hitler.
Okay.
It's a great
I'm glad you stopped yourself there. That was not good to say.
But it's interesting to think about that now those people in our history are becoming popular culture figures, because if you look at the new movie that came out, there's that Jojo Rabbit movie where a young boy befriends Hitler character as an imaginary friend, and it's a comedy with Scarlett Johansson.
Okay.
Yeah.
But even still, I mean, I guess I can see what David's saying, but look, fascination about Hitler and how he rose to power from a historical perspective has always been there. You can go on Netflix, there's like 20 Hitler documentaries, and that's all interesting, but like, they all have the message.
Yeah.
There's the underlying message. Yes. I mean, if you're just watching it on mute, without closed captions, and you missed the whole point. I just like, how does that happen? And then, how does no one say, stop the parade?
Do you remember what happened in Charlottesville?
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
Okay. This is a country that went to war against people whose flag was that swastika.
Right.
And here they are in 2018?
It's 2019. Oh, last year. Oh,
yeah.
2017
in Charlottesville. And they're standing there with a great deal of pride marching around with this flag as their symbol.
Yes, but
what does that tell you?
I know. And
okay?
You're bringing up a good point, but there's millions of people in the United States that do that. And I'm not excusing it or saying it's right. What I'm saying is that is part of something. Agree with it or disagree. It's there. It permeates through that culture in the South, which... Wrong, or I think you know which side I fall on that one. But it's like number one rule of Halloween costumes is don't be Hitler. That's all I got to say about that. We're going to take a quick commercial break, then the news on 720 WGN. What better way to deal with all this weather than by having a little rum? And joining me now on the phone line, we're going to be talking to Mr. Ramon Diaz. Ramon, how you doing this evening? You're on WGN.
Yeah, we're doing great.
All right, Ramon, we're talking about Rums of Puerto Rico, and next Thursday night you guys have a great event. First of all, tell us about your little U.S. tour, big U.S. tour, and your fifth stop here in the city of Chicago.
Well, we're going to be in Chicago in this party of November. It's Milk and Shakers.
Uh-huh.
We do a pop-up tour. We're going to have some seminars that we're going to talk a little bit of a Rum of Puerto Rico program, how to make rums, what's the difference to make rums in Puerto Rico or in other parts of the world. And also we're going to have a rum tasting. So we're going to taste 4 different brands, the best brand of the island. We're going to taste Bacardi Limited Reserve. That is one of the best ones. Up to 16-year-old, Docu, Gran Añejo, and also Romo del Barrilito. So then we're going to have some music, guest bartending from La Casita de Ron in the Old San Juan. We're going to have a very good party.
Yeah. So, Ramon, I got to ask, because I think a lot of people, you know, everyone has that maybe that one drink that they had in college that messed them up one night, and then they swear they're never going to have it again. For me, that was rum until a few years I actually tried some better rum. And I think that's really what we're getting at here is rum from Puerto Rico is a lot different than rum that you might buy off the bottom shelf of your local grocery store. And that's really what you guys want to show is that, man, rum, you know, people like to sift scotch or whiskey or sip it, but, man, rum has an awesome flavor when it's a real quality rum.
Yeah, of course. You know, this is my that's my work. You know, a lot of people when thinking rum and coke, but the rum is more than that. So we got a very good rum for sip, for drink on the rocks or straight. Very good aged rums. Also, I'm always having my home. You know, coconut water ice cube. If you drink a little bit of aged rum with coconut water ice cubes, you know, this is awesome, man. Mm. So it's a very different. It's not the regular, you know, white rum that you mix only with, I don't know, with Coke or cranberry or orange juice. So we got, you know, very good quality rums that we can taste like neat or on the rocks.
Right.
Like a whiskey or like a cognac or something like that.
So, obviously, Puerto Rico is still recovering, of course, from Hurricane Maria, which went through. A lot of people's thoughts are with Puerto Rico. I just think that the history of Puerto Rico with its rum is so rich. You can't tell the whole story of it, of course, but, you know, I think that's something, I mean, I imagine people can learn a lot when they go there, too, about, you know, where the rum comes from, how it's made, and some of the great rum that's there, and why it comes from Puerto Rico.
Well, you know, Puerto Rico is the biggest rum producer in the world. So we got the biggest brand. And also we make a lot of rum by bulk for other brands. We got some brands like Bacardi and Don Q that have more than 150 years making rum in the island. Also, if this is very good for the island, we got a program, Rum Puerto Rico is a government program that promotes all the Puerto brands. And that's, you know, made for us, for the economy of Puerto Rico, about more than $300 million a year.
Wow.
That's a lot. We saw a lot of rums. As you know, we got two different hurricanes, and we are recovering of the hurricane. So I can say that all the people that are here, if you would like to help a little bit of the economy of Puerto Rico or the recovery of the island, only you need to, you know, to bring a lot of Puerto Rican rums.
Yes, exactly.
For all of you.
Exactly. There's a lesson there. You should donate some money to the Red Cross, of course, for all the work that they do, and then buy some rum. You do both things.
Yeah. It's very easy for all of you, you know. I mean, actually, we got a, you know, very quality rums. We got love for make rums. So Rum Puerto Rico have a lot of regulations to make rums. So if you like to buy a very good rum, you need to buy a Puerto Rican rum, of course.
There you go. All right, Ramon, we're out of time here today, but it's at Broken Shaker. It is next Thursday night. It is from 7 p.m. till 2 a.m. And again, they'll just be in the depth of some cold weather next week. So what better way to feel like you're on Puerto Rico, on the island there, than having some rum there, too. All right, more coming up on WGN after this. 7:20 WGN. Thank you very much, David Jennings. And he just heard that forecast. Boy, that doesn't sound like fun. Let's get the heck out of Chicago and the Midwest. But if you want to do it on a budget and you want to find a good deal, you turn to the travel mom. Emily Kaufman, my good friend. Emily, how you doing here this evening?
Hi, good, my friend. So good to talk with you.
And you are warm right now, right? You're in California.
I hate to rub it in because I was in Chicago yesterday. So I do know that there's a bit of a temperature difference between Southern California and Chicago right about now.
Yeah, quite a bit of a temperature difference, but we won't hold it against you because you're going to help us out talking about traveling. And, you know, I think a lot of people, as they get ready for the holiday season, they, you know, traveling's in their mind, or maybe they want to, you know, get away into the spring or whatever the case may be. But, you know, as we approach Black Friday, everyone thinks about great gift ideas. Traveling is an option, too, either as a gift or a gift for yourself, and there are deals to be found.
Oh, there certainly are deals to be found for Black Friday. I think that people people associate Black Friday with the big TVs or big electronic items, but Black Friday and Cyber Monday are all great time to take advantage of some travel deals.
What sort of ones do you have out there? Because I know, like, when you're in the midst of a Chicago winter, the first thing that comes to your mind, of course, is a cruise or something like that to a warm weather spot. So I imagine you've got some, you know, awesome deals or hot spots we should be considering, whether it's cruising or going to an island somewhere.
Well, there are several different ways to look at cruises, right? You can escape to a warm weather Caribbean destination. Celebrity Cruises is going to have a whole bunch of Black Friday specials. And they just debuted a new ship about a year ago called the Celebrity Edge. And she is coming back into the Caribbean for the winter sailing season. Also, there's a cruise line that I love. It's kind of a struggle to pronounce. Hurtigruten.
Hurtigruten?
Hurtigruten Cruises.
Okay.
And they are the small luxury powered expedition cruises that are all about sustainability. And they go to those bucket list places like Antarctica or South America. And the reason I bring them up is for Black Friday, they're going to have a 50% off sale. So these are kind of pricey cruises, but when you can save 50% off, and that's their biggest savings that they've ever promoted. So you want to take a look at something like Hurtigruten, take a look at Celebrity, and there will be a lot of different hotel deals coming as well. So when it comes to Black Friday, don't limit yourself just to those big box items.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, especially, and Emily, I don't know, do you talk to people that actually, I mean, I don't know, for the most part, when I book travel, I book my own travel, but, or, you know, giving the gift to someone else of traveling, that can be something cool to do, whether you're going to surprise the kids with a trip to Disney or something like that. What a cool way to spread the holiday love instead of just a tangible thing that gets thrown away in a year. The gift of travel is something real that you can give.
I love the idea of giving the gift of travel because right now, holiday time is peak. That's the busiest, most expensive time of the year, Thanksgiving week and the weeks between Christmas and New Year's. But in January, we go into what's called shoulder season because it's after that busy holiday season and before spring break. So airlines, hotels, cruises, theme parks are doing what they can to entice you to come. So maybe take a look at giving somebody a holiday gift of travel and then actually taking that vacation in January after the New Year's celebrations are over.
That's a good idea. And you could also then, we've talked about this, the idea of coming up with a creative way to give that gift, whatever the case may be, to actually still have something to unwrap under the tree.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I'm a big fan of Legoland.
Yes.
Legoland in both California and Florida, and both of them are coming out with big new offers in the spring. The Florida parks are opening up a pirate-themed hotel in California. They're opening their largest expansion to date based on the Lego movie series. I think it would be really cute for a kid to open up a little Lego toy under the Christmas tree. And then you take them to a trip in the springtime to go check out those things. So it's kind of a gift that extends itself and keeps on giving.
Emily Kaufman's the travel mom. You've been on GMA, the Today Show, Steve Harvey, all this sort of stuff. So you got to know at least a little bit more than I do, that's saying it in the least. I'm always confused, I guess you could say, when is really the best time to buy an airline ticket in terms of how long until the trip happens? And is there a day in the week that's better? There's always rumors about which days of the week are better. Are there any? Does it change all the time? And how far out should we be booking airline travel?
You know, I think that changes, and that is so subjective all the time. What I always say is my rule of thumb is if you have a specific event you know you're traveling to on a certain date, buy that ticket out as far as you possibly can. If you have flexibility, you can register proactively with the airline and be alerted when there are fare sales for airlines. So say you get into the Southwest Airlines system and you want to register to be alerted on fare specials, you can do that and register by email. Also, considering looking into some of those alternate airports, like I said, I live in Los Angeles. We have LAX, Ontario, Bourbon, John Wayne, Orange County, Long Beach, so many airports to choose from, and people don't necessarily take advantage of that. So look into the alternate airports as well. For me, with Chicago, Midway and Southwest Airlines, I tend to find the best prices on those airlines compared to going out of O'Hare.
And usually a little, few less headaches too, as well. So we're coming up on the end of the year, and I know people are sitting there with like extra days in their vacation PTO time, and I don't know what it is because I use every single darn day that I'm given. But what's your message out there to people, just kind of as a traveler and a lover of travel, to those people that for whatever reason miss out on using their days that they're given?
You know, I grew up with nothing, very single mom, four kids. We never went anywhere. So coming into travel has been something I've discovered in my adult life. And that the gift of travel shows us so much. It's the greatest teacher that exists. And my goal is to inspire, motivate, and encourage people to step out of their comfort zones and to have new experiences. And one of the ways that I do that is I give trips away. I have an Instagram page and a Facebook page at The Travel Mom. I don't sell anything on that. I give trips away because I really want to provide the opportunity for other people to travel, because it's been such a game changer in my life for me.
I've seen the pictures of you traveling, and you and I were chatting the other day and just looking at some of the pictures. You truly do enjoy it. Yeah, I imagine there's a lot of listeners out there that maybe the travel bug hasn't hit them yet, and they're, you know, they're getting a little older, and they think, you know, traveling can't be for me. But really, like, they're at any age, as long as you can kind of move around a little bit, boy, there's never too late of a time to give it a shot. Is there any, like, simple advice you have for someone that might be just a little bit fearful or afraid of making that first trip? Is it just doing a weekend thing first just to get your feet wet? Or what do you advise for people that maybe don't get a chance to travel all that much?
You know, I have a father like that. My dad is 82 years old, and he's got food allergies, and he's completely apprehensive, doesn't like to get out of his routine. And what I say is step out of your comfort zone and have one new experience locally. Be a tourist in your own town. Maybe try a new restaurant. Try a staycation somewhere. Try that short little road trip across town. And just kind of dip your toe in those travel waters if it's something that you haven't done before. Because I know that when I take my father on these types of experiences, he loves them. He's happy we do it. He gets very anxious before we do. I think that's a very common thing for a lot of people. But just try one new thing, one new experience. We are such creatures of habit that we do the same things over and over again because we're comfortable with it. And when we push ourselves, we discover just how capable we are. So that's why I've got the travel bug, and I try to share that with other people.
I love that. One quick step. All right, producer Mike, you got a question for the Travel Mom.
Yes, Travel Mom, I have a lot of time that I need to take off, and a lot of my trips are very spontaneous. Like, I'll book them, and then I will go to Amsterdam within 2 weeks or something like that, which causes me to book a flight, and then I kind of roll the dice as far as seats go, because, you know, I'm just trying to figure out what, just to get on the plane. What is there a hack or a technique or a strategy you can use when you're at the gate to maybe get that aisle seat that you want? Because
if it's really something, a hack or a technique, I just tend to go up and ask the people and be super pleasant when you ask. One of the keys to this is to take advantage of the loyalty program. Sometimes our credit cards have perks and benefits that you don't even realize you're entitled to. So take a look and see if your credit card company has a loyalty program with any of the airlines. Also, simply being a member of a loyalty program in itself, if you're flying to Amsterdam, that one trip is going to generate enough miles to push you into some elite status.
Mm.
So you want to make sure that you're registered with the loyalty program. I tend to fly the same airlines over and over again because I've become accustomed to being able to get that aisle seat or the emergency exit row. So I definitely am a good believer in the loyalty program.
If there's one person I trust, it's Emily Coffin in an emergency role. I got to say, they ask her and she's going to jump into action. I know that. By the way, Mike, you're not allowed any time off during my shows with you. That's fine. I know you got a lot coming up. Emily, before I let you go, you know, we're thinking warm weather and boy, every year, you know, obviously these hurricanes, they're rolling on through. And of course, the Bahamas were very hard hit. You and I have kind of chatted informally. I think we're going to chat on the jam in the next couple weeks about this. The idea being that the Bahamas, I think a lot of people might be afraid to even look there as an option, but there are options there. And boy, that could be a way to certainly help their economy.
Well, there are a couple places that we really want to support with tourism. One of them is the Bahamas. Hurricane Dorian did make landfall, but I don't think people realize the Bahamas are made up of 700 different islands and keys. And it just made landfall in a very small amount. So the Bahamas, particularly Nassau Paradise Island, are open for business, eager to receive tourists. Also, Puerto Rico. We keep hearing about Puerto Rico over and over again in the news and negative light. Puerto Rico is a terrific place to go visit. Their beaches are gorgeous. You don't really struggle with a currency issue or anything like that. So I want to encourage people to go to those kind of places. The economy needs us.
She is the travel mom, Emily Coffin. Give us one more time the plug for the website and your social media stuff, too.
My social media, I'm on Instagram and Facebook as the Travel Mom. And like I said, I give trips away. I'm giving away a holiday trip right now to Seattle. That is really fun. Do I Enchant Christmas, which is one of their big programs. Also, I have an event coming up March 6th, 7th, and 8th, the first ever Travel Mom Meetup in Huntington Beach, where we're going to do all the things we've talked about, stepping out of your comfort zone, trying surfing lessons or gentle yoga. And, of course, there's going to be a big disco party because I'm a disco girl.
Uh-huh.
And I just am looking for any excuse to get that disco music on, so I want to bring together a bunch of fun people. And there's information about that on my Facebook page and my website, thetravelmom.com.
I love that you're going to get a bunch of people together. So, like, if you are someone that's apprehensive or maybe you're traveling alone, you want to meet some people or whatever the case may be, or you want to try a bunch of different things in one weekend that you haven't done, what are the dates for that, Emily?
It's March 6th, 7th, and 8th. It's in Huntington Beach, California. It's really affordable, and everything is included. I'm going to have some fun special guests, and you know me well enough
yes.
to know. If somebody wants to get on that surfboard and they've never been in the ocean, you can be sure I'm going to be next to you helping you get up on that surfboard.
Oh, I believe it. I believe it. And it's also going to be 0 degrees here. I can almost guarantee it on that weekend in March. So what better way to get away? All right, Emily, it's so good to chat with you. Enjoy the warm weather. Please send a little of it our way, okay?
I will do my best.
All right, good to chat with Emily Coffin, the Travel
Thank
Mom.
You.
Yeah, good to chat with you. Talk to you soon, Emily, at thetravelmom.com. Quick commercial break, then more on 720 WGN. All right, it's 10:25 on this Friday night. All right, so if you're sticking around, I told you about the rum thing next Thursday. If you want to get out of town, the Travel Mom will help you out with that. Michael Heidemann, I didn't know you were such a prolific traveler.
Yes, I like to go.
What made you want to go to Amsterdam at the last minute?
So about 2 years ago, I had about 10 days that I needed to take off before the end of the year. And I've always wanted to go. I knew I'm a big history buff, and I know they had a lot of great museums there and a lot of awesome just sights and sounds. And I've only seen it through pictures and movies. And I thought, hey, you know, that'd be a great place to go. And the other thing was I wanted to go to Germany and Paris, and they're all interconnected by a train, so that was the game plan.
They have these things called trains
now. No, none of those things.
They're a people mover. They move you across the country at light-fast speeds.
I should take one of those before they go out of style.
Yeah, for sure.
But it was an amazing trip, and yeah, I just went there for 10 days.
You went to Amsterdam for 10 days, or to Northern Europe for 10 days.
Well, I stayed in Amsterdam because I had such a good time there.
Oh, you never even left?
Never left.
Never got on that train.
In my head, I'm actually still over there.
Every day he'd get the ticket, he'd go to the platform, he'd be like, yeah, never mind. The train would keep on going.
Just had both bags, my bindle that I'm just going on the train with.
Just couldn't get on it.
What's your best vacation that you've ever been on, John?
Oh, boy. I don't know. Iceland was really cool. That's probably like the most far away, but I'm looking forward. We're going to the Baltic next June.
Wow.
Doing a little cruise, which will be a lot of fun.
Are you a cruise guy?
I like it in the Caribbean. I've never done a European one. Mm-hmm. But we wanted to move to a boat. We wanted to do a few different cities. And, you know, the boat travels at night. You just get on it. Mm-hmm. It's got a casino on it.
Jeez, okay.
I think people know how cruises work. I don't know if I had to describe that. But, yeah, so that's what we're going to be doing.
Wonderful.
So. How many days left you got this year, by the way, Michael?
I got a couple left.
Gosh, see, I always, before the year even starts, schedule your days. That's how you make sure you take them. Speaking of breaks, a quick one here on 720 WGN. Thank you very much, Roger. 10:35 on this Friday evening. Roger, how you doing tonight,
buddy? I'm doing fantastic. It's the start of my week. It's the end of your week.
End of my week. Yeah. Start of your night, and right in the middle of ours. You feeling good here? Feeling good?
Yeah, feeling very good.
Hey, by the way, I was working the Blackhawks game last night, and mm-hmm. we had the shoot the puck contest. I go down to the ice and help run that thing on the ice. And I was meeting with the contestants beforehand, trying to get to know them, see if they have any fun facts. And I was talking to this amateur bowler who should go pro. Roger, ooh, his average is 241. That's pretty good, right?
That's his average.
Average. Roger, he
tell him we
bowled...
need people on Thursday nights.
I said, I'm like, I got a guy that needs some help. I was like, yeah, you can play for the media team of the WGN radio
I'll
team.
I'll bet you that guy is on at least one league per night.
He's not. So he had an issue in his elbow, like a tendon thing.
Okay.
That has sidelined him just a little bit.
Oh.
Can you guess how many perfect games he's rolled? How many 300s?
Oh, with a 241 average?
Yeah.
I'd say probably averages while he was bowling. How young was he?
He's in his
30s?
Probably young 40s.
Young 40s? I bet you he's had at least 10 a year.
Yeah, so he's 96. So, yeah, maybe if he's been doing it for 10 years.
Yeah,
okay, there
easily,
you go. Yeah.
Easily.
He knows. 96 perfect games.
I wonder if he's ever had a perfect night.
He hasn't. So a couple nights ago, he got 300 in the first game, mm-hmm. 300 in the second game,
ooh,
six frames with strikes, and then got a 9 on the 7th.
Oh, man.
And then he only got one strike in the 10th, I think. So he got a 268 to close it out. But yeah, still.
I struggled for a... Well, we're not going to talk about the first game.
Okay.
But I had a 173 second game and a 171 third game.
That's still really good, Raj.
Middle of last season, I've just been falling off the wagon. I don't know what's wrong. I'm trying.
Yeah, we'll find it. Can you find the wagon even, Raj?
Well, you know, after I clean my trifocals, I can pretty much see not too far and see if there's a wagon around.
Hey, remember last month when we solved the Chicago fire?
Oh, yeah, I disagreed with you, but you won me over.
Yeah, yeah, it was the gambler. Well, guess
what?
We're going to solve another mystery tonight.
Oh, goody.
Yeah. Ooh.
Ooh, this is...
Yeah. This is the Unsolved Mystery theme from, like, the 80s.
Oh.
Anytime I would hear this, I would freak out. This show scares the crud out of me.
Really?
It did as a kid.
You know, because of the theme? Because
it's all about murders, Roger, and I was, like, 8.
Oh, okay.
But, no, the theme is very spooky.
Yeah.
And it's gone now. Oh,
I always thought the same, believe it or not, about Perry Mason.
Oh,
the opening theme song before I actually saw what the show was.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it used to scare the heck out of me for some reason.
This one is freaky, this story.
Okay.
It's from Illinois. We are going to solve the case of the Mad Gasser of Mattoon.
Ooh.
Have you heard of this story, Roger?
No, but I like the Mad Gasser.
Yeah. Of Mattoon.
Okay.
It sounds like we're about to tell a joke, but this is a very serious case.
Okay.
And it's fascinating. Y'all ready to do it? Heidemann, you ready?
Oh, I have been waiting all week.
Okay. I just told you about it this morning, but that's fine. Here we go. The Mad Gasser of Mattoon. We're going back to September of 1944. So if you could picture, we're in the waning days in the war, World War II.
Yeah.
Paris has been liberated. We're after D-Day.
Yeah.
A lot of the men in these small towns are at war.
Yeah, sure, they're away.
The young men, at least.
Mm-hmm.
So we're in Mattoon, East Central Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure most people can picture East Central Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
Small town, not too big. It is September 2nd, 1944.
Mm-hmm.
Shortly after 11 o'clock in the evening, a woman named Mrs. Kearney goes to bed. It's a Friday night. She takes her daughter into the bedroom as well. her sister's in the house as well with her son as well. Mm-hmm. So there's four people in the house, but they're in a different part. So two and two. She says she first noticed all of a sudden a sickening sweet odor in the bedroom.
Ooh.
At the time, she thought it might have been the flowers outside the window.
Okay.
However, the odor grew stronger, and I began to feel a paralysis of my legs and lower body.
Uh-oh.
She grew frightened. She screamed for Martha, her sister. She came into the bedroom, to which the door had been closed, and asked me what was the matter. I told her of the sensation I had, says Mrs. Kearney, but she was unable to move from her bed. So, at one point, her sister notices the odor, too, which seems to be coming in through an open window. She went ahead and summoned the next-door neighbor, ran across the street, and grabbed Mrs. Carl B. Robertson of Marshall Avenue. She called police. So, what was that? Is it the sprinkler system going off, right, which is going to get the neighbor?
It's gas. It's not fire.
You can't control
that's gas.
Yeah.
The C2... The C2 detector just went off.
That was actually coming through the walls of the studio, not part of the story. Sorry, that was
okay. So, got the neighbor. We got the kids. They searched the yard. They searched the neighborhood.
Yeah,
but could find no trace of a prowler.
Mm.
So, 12:30, her husband comes home. He's a cab driver late at night, and as he was walking to the house, he sees a man, a prowler. 12:30 now, midnight, so an hour and a half after the original notice of this odor, was seen at the bedroom window again. So, Mr. Kearney, the woman's husband, said that he arrived at the front of the house. He saw a man at the window. He gave chase, but the prowler escaped. The prowler was tall, dressed in dark clothing, and wore a light-fitted cap. Police were called a second time, but a more thorough search came up with nothing. Mrs. Kearney said she recovered the use of her legs and arms within about 30 minutes or so after the paralysis. Her daughter became ill from the odor but had recovered by the morning. So opinions differed as the type of what this gas was, what the anesthetic was. However, because of its odor, it was believed to have been chloroform or ether or a combination of both. The ingredients could have been sprayed into the room with a fine mist, and if used at a distance not too far from the sleepers, would have proved effective. Both chloroform or ether would have accounted for the parched throat and the mouth burns as they described. So, they reason, perhaps, why would someone do this? Well, they say that the sister and Mrs. Kearney, they had a considerable amount of money in the house, and that they were counting it shortly before they went to bed, and maybe with the lights on, there was someone passing by, discovered that they were counting money and said, oh, well, I've got to get it, and that was maybe their way of disabling them or knocking them out or something. So they all retire. They send the family to the other side of the town, and that's the end of the story for them.
Ooh.
But it continues. That was September 2nd. September 6th comes along next. We'll have that after this on 720 WGN. We're continuing to track the mystery in Mattoon of the mysterious gas that disturbed Mrs. Kearney and her daughter. The next day, so we're in September of 1944, Roger Badish, Michael Heideman, myself, John Hansen, we are going to solve this mystery here that has lingered on for, oh boy, I can't do math really quickly.
1944?
54 plus 73 years.
Wait,
true story, by the way.
44?
Yeah.
75 years. It's 2019.
Okay.
Close enough.
Someone get a calculator. Yeah. All right. So, put the sprinklers on. All right. So, 1944, a mother and daughter, no laughing matter. They wake up in the middle of the night to strange odors. They feel paralysis. And they, you know, her husband, when he comes home after the police have already been called and go home, the husband comes home. He's a cab driver at 12:30 in the morning. Then he sees a prowler. The cops are called back. The prowler gets away. And that's supposedly the end of it. So they publish this in the paper the next day. And it's an article called Mrs. Kearney and Daughter First Victims. But they're not the first victims. We later learned from the Gazette that in the following days, three other citizens of Mattoon came forward claiming that they had also been victims of gassings before the events that we've told already of September the 6th. Three other citizens say that they had lightheadedness, paralysis, upset stomach, vomiting, accompanied by that sickly sweet odor. And now we go to September 6th. 1944, September 6th. And here's the article from the paper. Mattoon's anesthetic prowler at first believed to have fled the city after his axe last week was on the loose again Tuesday night, adding another victim to his list. The latest person to suffer from the fumes was Mrs. Carl Cortez of 921 North 21st Street. But the circumstances in which she became a victim differed from the five previously reported cases. Mrs. Cortez, as a result of her experience with the drug or anesthetic, was violently ill for more than 2 hours. Her throat, her mouth so badly burned by the fumes that she inhaled that blood came from the cracks in her parched end and swollen lips, and her seared throat and the roof of her mouth. She showed the condition of her lips and mouth to the reporter, and they said that they mostly had receded, but she could still notice that the lips were a little bit perched. So she tells the story. My husband and I arrived home at about 10 o'clock Tuesday night, and according to our usual custom, they don't wear costumes, only on Halloween. This is September. Get it together, Hanson. In our usual custom, they entered our home through the rear door. We had been in the house a few minutes, and we were sitting in the front room when we noticed a white cloth on the front porch against the screen door. I picked up the cloth, which was a little bit bigger than a man's handkerchief, and unfolded it. There was a large wet spot in the center inside the fold, and without thinking, I brought the cloth to my face and smelt it. When I inhaled the fume from the cloth, I had a sensation similar to coming in contact with a strong electric current. The feeling raced down my body to my feet and then seemed to settle in my knees. It was a feeling of paralysis. My husband had to help me into the house, and soon my lips were swollen and the roof of my mouth and my throat burned. I began to spit blood, and my husband called a physician more than 2 hours before I began to feel normal. She said that the prowler may have intended to knock out their dog, which was at home and usually slept on the front porch, before attempting to enter the house. She said that he might have been frightened away from the front of the house, and she said that her husband, when her and her husband entered the back door. She says on the sidewalk at the edge of the front porch, she found a skeleton key that gave evidence of being used frequently, and a large lipstick tube, for the contents were nearly gone. Police investigated the home. They took the cloth down to headquarters. They analyzed it, but they couldn't determine what the substance was. Chief Cole also said that a man had been picked up by local police about a block away from the home a short time after the incident had been reported. The name was withheld. The man told police that he was, quote, lost. They make it really nefarious sounding in the newspaper, but who's really lost wandering the streets in Mattoon?
The streets of Love, right? Oh, that's a different... Yeah. Go ahead.
Police Tuesday checked what they thought might be a hideout for the prowler, but found nothing to bear out the theory. It doesn't stop there. Other newspapers start picking up on the story. Soon the entire country was reading about Mattoon's rumored mad gasser. For months, U.S. newspapers have been warning Americans that maybe Nazis would employ poison gas in attacks against civilians. So this sort of story sold a lot of newspapers to jittery citizens. They didn't stop. Reports of gassings continued and increased daily. On September 8th, the Gazette published an editorial criticizing police for not taking more reports seriously. Shortly after, 10 Illinois State police officers assigned to the case, as well as two agents from the FBI. Before long, police began to receive several reports every single night. Many victims reporting a tall figure dressed in black fleeing from their property immediately after the attacks, as well as blue vapors, buzzing sounds. The Gazette covered its coverage through the as people across the country wanted to know more. Soon, large groups of armed citizens were roaming the town each and every night, following police cars that were speeding off to investigate another attack. Police officers were ordered to start arresting the chasers. Tension mounted, and on September the 13th, 8 days, three dozen victims later, the reports of attacks ended.
What?
Investigators at a complete loss for an explanation. Careful searches found no chemical evidence of harmful gases, and all the victims were completely free of any lingering symptoms. To this day, police don't know who it was or if it was. We'll solve this mystery after this on WGN. All right, we're going to solve the mystery of the Mattoon Mad Gasser. 1944, 33 people claim to have been gassed. Some saw a prowler while they slept in the night and had paralysis and a lot of other symptoms. So, the only suspect ever investigated in the attacks was a man named Farley Lilwin. He was a student of chemistry. He was bitter because he had been ostracized by the community because he was suspected of being gay, obviously not as accepted in 1944. He was a compelling suspect. He had the means and the motive, and most of the alleged attacks occurred near his home. But he was placed under surveillance after one of the first couple attacks, and the attacks continued even though the police were watching him every single night. So, some people don't think that it was him. Some people think it was a mystery man who just escaped into the distance. But now the most common theory accepted by people is that there was never an attacker at all. They labeled this under mass hysteria. Almost 2 weeks after the attacks began, the local commissioner of public health announced that there undoubtedly may have been a gassing incident, but it was not anything nefarious. In fact, it was likely hysteria. Hearing alarms, other people started to panic and were confronted by any odor. They immediately freaked out and almost paralyzed themselves. They take their hypotheses pretty far, announcing that there had never been a gas attack and that maybe it had been triggered by chemicals carried in the wind from nearby industrial facilities and then exasperated by public panic. So, could have been toxic waste pollutants. That's one person wonders that from the plants. So was it toxic waste pollutants? Was it mass hysteria? Or was there really a mad gasser? Michael, what do you think?
Interesting. I know that during that time, there was a lot of people who were in their heads. There was no internet,
yes,
no TV.
Right.
War of the Worlds was taking over.
Yeah.
Through a lot of spoken word, and news was very trusted too. So the minute that your neighbor said, "This person gassed me," you're like, "All right, that's what happened.
That's what happened."
I think that you're right. I think it was just all in their heads, and they were looking for a person to blame.
For a boogeyman?
They were looking for a boogeyman. Mattoon, Illinois doesn't sound like the most happening town. I grew up in a small town like that, too. So, yeah, it's interesting where the mind can go in these kind of situations.
Roger?
What I mean.
Roger, what do you think?
Well, I'm not guilty because I wasn't born yet.
Right.
So I'm out of the equation. I'm going to go along
suspect.
With...
Yeah,
never. Well, as far as we know.
That's what you would say.
Yeah right. I'm very much along with the mass hysteria theory.
Yeah.
Again, it was September. There a lot of things going on in September. You've got fall slowly approaching. You've got summer ending. You've got a lot of blooms happening. A lot of people worried about the war.
All right, Roger's got mass hysteria. I'm going to give you the real answer after the news right now on WGN. 11:07 on this Friday night. Good evening, everyone. John Hansen in until 1 o'clock in the morning. Going to put a bow on the mad gasser of Mattoon. If you're just joining us, 1944, September, 33 people claim to have been victim of a gas attack inside their home. Some sort of a chemical reaction causing them some form of paralysis or itching of the eyes or bleeding in some spots. A couple people reporting seeing the prowler outside their house. Again, 1944. 44 in Mattoon. But as the stories continue to get wilder, more and more police officers thinking that it's just actually mass hysteria or some sort of chemical reaction blowing in the wind into people's homes. So our suspects are either mass hysteria, there never was an attacker, some form of chemical spill or something going on. Some people even blame the Nazis that there was, because again, this is World War II, that the Nazis were going to try some sort of attack on people in the United States. Or the one suspect that has been named in this, a man by the name of Farley, oh, he's got four L's in his last name, which is about too many. L-L-E-W-E-L-L-Y-N.
Llewellyn.
Llewellyn?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Llewellyn. Yep.
Llewellyn.
Yeah.
Llewellyn.
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 Does Gwen got a guess on the line? Is that what we're going to, Mr. Mike?
She loves the story, and I think she has some insight into it.
All right, let's go to Gwen. Gwen, you're on WGN.
Yeah, you know what? I'm going with the chemist theory, and as soon as authorities kicked in, he backed down. I really do. Somebody has knowledge of how this stuff works, and then other people panicked and worked off it, but I honestly think there was an attack, at least one attack, and other people jumped on it.
Gwen, have you heard this story before or no?
No, but yeah, because I've studied chemistry and I worked for a university hospital and see bizarre situations, I wouldn't doubt it that it happened at least once.
So that's what I believe, especially since the husband comes home the first night and sees someone there. It's almost like he came back, this alleged prowler, like he knew that the police had come and he wanted to maybe finish whatever he was starting, not realizing that a husband would come home and that the attack was real. I'm going to agree with you, Gwen.
Exactly. It's like I've seen so much and heard so much that was so factual, so I'm going to go with that.
All right, so, Gwen, we appreciate the phone call. Thanks for calling. 720 WGN. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say I sent two text messages to you guys, so I don't know if you guys had that on or not.
Oh, yeah, I got that on, Gwen. I'll check. Good point, though. Hey, we'd rather have people call. We want to hear your beautiful voice anyways, Gwen.
All right. Well, thanks, and have a great weekend.
Yeah, you too. So the man's name is Farley Llewellyn. He lived nearby. Neighbors suspected that he might be gay, which, of course, in 1944 was a whole different thing than it was then. Might have been ostracized. Some people suspected he might have had a mental illness. In fact, his family, shortly after this, puts him in an institution. Now, I don't know this guy, of course, and we don't have much. I tried to find more information about him, what ended up happening to this gentleman. So he maybe was thrown in an institution for reasons he shouldn't have. I don't know if he was unstable, but he was a student of chemistry an hour away at the University of Illinois. He had the means, he had the motive, the attacks occurred near his home. Now again, he was put under surveillance and the attacks stopped, but I think Gwen is right. I think the first and the second attack, maybe the ones that were reported beforehand chronologically, but were reported afterwards too. And then I think the town went crazy. I think anytime they smelled something, they freaked out. Now, one reason why mass hysteria is supported as the cause, and it's really a chauvinistic idea, a lot of the police officers were like, oh, it's because all their husbands are gone. It is women overreacting. And I think a lot of people were like, oh, yeah, it is probably women overreacting, until you realize that that's just a bunch of BS, that women aren't just going to overreact. If they smell something, they feel something, it's real. But hysteria in general, regardless of your gender, can be something that's real. So Llewellyn, again, accomplished chemistry student. And what else had to say? Oh, they clustered around his home, and that the first victims, and when you talk about any case, whether it's someone that eventually becomes a serial killer or anything like that, often their first victims are someone that they know. Well, guess what? Farley Llewellyn went to high school with each of the first couple victims. Now, it's a small town as well, so I think a lot of people went to the same high school in Mattoon, Illinois. But all the attacks stop. No more reports of it ever happen again after mid-September 1944. 33 people within 5 or 6 days or so. At one point, police said you guys are using up too many of our resources calling us about these supposed attacks, that if anyone calls us for an attack, we're going to send out the ambulance as well, and we're going to do a full examination of you, the victim, both mentally and physically, to figure this out. They had already started to buy into this hysteria thing. But if I had to guess, I'm definitely going with the theory that Farley committed the first one or two of these, then when got scared because the police were looking after that, and then everyone else sort of feeling that it might have been the case. I think I've cracked it, Mike Heidemann.
That's a really great point, because it would only take one or two to start
to freak people out.
To freak people out, exactly.
And when you're talking about gas, like, if it's not something you can see, although some people have said that they saw blue vapors, like, and like a thing like paralysis, of course, it's something you feel, but even just being like really freaked out can cause panic attacks, can cause shortness of breath. So if even in a moment you caught a whiff of something, whether it was something coming through the air, Mattoon's surrounded by a lot of farmland. It's September, it's harvest time. Mm-hmm. So I imagine you're going to get some things in the air and you smell something that's, you know, you're not expecting inside your home. You start to smell something that you've heard about in this newspaper. You freak out. So I can't imagine this guy went around town and did it to 33 different people. That'd be too hard, especially with the whole town watching now.
Yeah, and it doesn't make sense as far as... I'm sure that the police accounts really scared the population,
yes,
too. The fact that they said, we're going to do an evaluation of your brain once we get to your...
Yeah, yeah, if you keep on reporting this. Yeah, exactly. And that's why some people say, well, maybe the attacks continue, but people were freaked out for reporting it because they were worried that they were going to look like a loony.
Mm-hmm. It was a crazy time back then, I'm sure. And the other thing is, there's no accountability as far as what the chemists were doing back then, I feel like. Especially if you're living in a small farm town, you can get some pretty devastating gas, I'm guessing.
Are you speaking from experience in McHenry? From all the labs you created back at home?
Doing a lot of experimentation, yeah.
Maybe,
you know?
From the movie Cider House Rules, I remember that the guy was really into ether and using different chemicals. I remember that was prevalent back then.
If this story sounds at all familiar to you, it actually ended up coming up in sort of pop culture in the science fiction novel The Body Snatchers.
Mm.
Anyone? Anyone?
Yes.
The story of the mad gasser of Mattoon is discussed. As one of the characters hypothesizes that widespread panic, which is spreading among the local population of potential alien invaders, is nothing but mass hysteria. So one of the characters suggests that, and they say, well, this has happened in the past in Mattoon.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Mattoon, Illinois.
And how far
home
away
of the
is
mad
that?
Gasser. That should say it on the water tower as you come in off Interstate 57. What were you saying, Mike? What was your question?
I was going to say, how far away is that from the city of Chicago?
Probably 3 hours south. You just take Interstate 57 straight on down. You pass Urbana-Champaign after about 2 hours, go another hour. I've been to Mattoon.
Mm-hmm.
Got a good friend from Mattoon.
You do?
His name is Farley Llewellyn. I'm just kidding. There it is, the sprinkler system. Okay. So that's our mystery. We're going to solve another one in a couple weeks. So, and if you have any of them, 312-91-7200, text them on in. If you know of any unsolved mysteries in the area, we can help solve them in the next couple weeks here on WGN. All right, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and then Blockbuster Blake is going to be joining us. You know him, you love him. We're going to talk gangster movies. We got a new Scorsese one coming out. It's 3.5 hours long. That's insane. And there's some controversy around it. We're going to talk about how James Dean, who's been dead for, I don't know how many years, is going to be in a new movie too, apparently. And we'll talk your favorite gangster films. So get those in, 312-91-7200, here on WGN. 720 WGN, it's 1119. Always a good chance to talk on a Friday night to Mr. Blockbuster Blake. Stubbsy, how you doing, bud?
I'm doing all right, John. How about yourself?
Hey, Hawks won last night. We're feeling good. Let's go to Pittsburgh and do it again.
Oh, gosh, I hope so.
Yeah, let's get on a little streak here. All right, Blakey Boo, let's talk movies here. And, boy, there's a lot of talk about how long Martin Scorsese's new movie is. You can't get it anywhere either. You haven't seen it yet, I know, and no spoilers here, obviously. But walk us through a little bit of what it's about and why the heck someone would make a movie that long, although it is Scorsese.
So this particular film is a Netflix-funded, big budget. It's pulling some big names, putting them all back on screen. Martin Scorsese, who's obviously one of the best, you know, known filmmakers alive, is sort of getting his band back together, so to speak. You've got Joe Pesci. There's Al Pacino in this. Robert De Niro. If you start at the top and you go down this whole cast list, there's a lot of names you're going to recognize. The big thing is that it's the story of a man named Frank Sheeran, who was known as the Irishman, who was allegedly a person who might have killed Jimmy Hoffa. Now, it's based off a book called, I believe it's called I Heard You Paint Houses, which apparently wasn't a title cool enough for Netflix, so they had to go with The Irishman. But it's a 3.5 hour long movie. It's said to be excellent. It has a very limited release right now, and a lot of special arrangements have been made in different cities in order to put this film on a big screen before it gets released later this month on Netflix and everybody can just watch it at home.
Why isn't it on a big release? Like, what's the big deal? Is it the length? Is it just how they wanted to distribute it?
It has a lot to do with, as I understand it, Netflix and several of the chain multiplexes couldn't find a way to play nice in order to get this thing distributed properly. Now, that doesn't mean that the film has any special concessions that need to be made, you know, like it needs to be shown at a certain frame rate or anything like that. It was just a business didn't add up. And I think in the cases where it is being shown, I think last time I checked it, north of I-80 here in Illinois, where I live, there's only 3 screens that are showing it. Now, that might have changed in the last probably 3 days, but it's getting a very limited release. It's only going to run for about, I think, 7 days, and then in a couple of weeks, it will then be released to the masses to watch at home. But I'm hearing that it's something that if you can, you really should make efforts, and I'm planning to try to do that this next weekend, to get up somewhere where you can see it and see it on a big screen.
Yeah, and boy, the cast, like you're saying, getting the band back together makes you kind of feel good inside knowing what you could potentially get, although you never know.
Yeah, you never really know. I mean, this is one of those things where, you know, Martin Scorsese's films, and he's made some giants as far as I'm concerned. I mean, the big ones that jump out at people right away are probably things like Taxi Driver, Raging Bull, King of Comedy. Those are, you know, 3 big movies that have been talked about a lot, I think, recently with the release of Joker, which Joker drew inspiration from specifically Taxi Driver and King of Comedy. But also, you know, films like The Departed, I mean, Goodfellas, you know, you can just go down the list, and Scorsese's probably got a movie that might be in, I would argue he's the type of filmmaker who could have a film, because he's made so many, in everybody, at least one is in their top 10.
Well,
I think that might be a fair statement.
It's amazing how many you rattle off, and you didn't even list my favorite gangster movie, which is Casino.
Of course. And Casino, there's also Mean Streets. I mean, it kind of turns into a snowball effect when you talk about Scorsese and at least gangster films or films about the mob or criminals would be maybe an easier way to break it down. Or really, when you get down to the depths of what these, you know, character studies and things are about, it's human beings and their very disturbing behavior, things that they, you know, may characters you might hate. I mean, like, I don't know about you, but I love the film Raging Bull, but I really detest the character of Jake LaMotta. It's a movie about Jake LaMotta.
So right.
And De Niro is so effective in the film that you can't look away. And it's very well crafted. And I think that that's one of the things that I'm hearing about The Irishman, even though it's 3.5 hours long, you know, but the audiences have been treated to very long films this year, and they haven't really complained about them. Avengers Endgame was long, not quite 3.5 hours, wasn't exactly 3 hours, but Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is another film that was quite long, upwards of close to 3 hours, and audiences certainly paid to go see that. So, you know, if people are worried about a trend of longer movies coming out, you know, I don't think that's going to be the case. I think there's always still certain parameters that studios want these films to be built around, you know, to reach certain demos and things like that. There's a lot of marketing research that's gone into it. But in the case of someone like Martin Scorsese, working with the production side of things with Netflix, I think it's pretty clear that he got carte blanche to make the movie he wanted to make with the people he wanted to make it with.
I'm fine with however long a movie is. I just wish they give you a bathroom break in the theater, an intermission.
Well, and see, that's the thing. It used to be that way. A lot of big, you know, films that were longer would have built-in intermissions with, like, sort of an orchestral interlude to, like, get people to go out, use the restroom, get concessions, come back in. When I saw Quentin Tarantino's The Hateful Eight in at the Music Box Theater, it was the roadshow presentation, they had that built in. And the movie's about 3 hours long. So, I mean, yeah, you can occasionally get that rare experience where they build that into your movie-going experience, mm-hmm. but it's kind of few and far between. And I think 3.5 hours, I know people out there who probably will be fine waiting to watch it at home when they can
exactly.
pause and take a break.
James Dean died more than 60 years ago. He's coming back to the big screen. Blake, we're going to talk about that after the break and after the news. And also, please, folks, your favorite gangster movie, make a case for it. Don't just give me the title of it. Tell us why it's the best. You can call in. That's always preferred. 312-981-7200 or text it on in. Before the break, though, really quickly, some business. For news at 10, watch WGN. Micah Mater, Joe Donlin, Dan Rohn, and Chicago's most trusted meteorologist, Tom Skillian. For TV news at 10, watch Chicago's very own WGN. Yeah, you are, Roger Badish. 11:36, Good Friday evening, still here until, midnight. That's how time works. John Hanson here until 1 o'clock in the morning tomorrow morning. And 312-981-7200 to join the conversation, whatever it may be. Right now we're talking gangster movies with Blockbuster Blake Stubbs. You ready to dive in here with some calls, Blake?
Oh, yes.
Okay, that was pretty enthusiastic. Let's go to Tom. You're on WGN.
I love this topic. I love it.
Tom, what do you got for us?
Payback with Mel Gibson. What? It's different levels of revenge. It keeps on the plot twist, keeps building up. This guy, James Coburn. And the best thing, Lucy Liu in a leather bikini in a whip. It didn't get any better than that.
Oh, Tom, that's a good one. Blake, your thoughts?
Payback is actually a pretty kick-butt movie. I remember seeing it when it came out back in 1999, so this movie's 20 years old. It stars Mel Gibson. It's also got Maria Bello in it. A lot of betrayal. It's got a heist factor, John, so of course I'm in. But also, as our caller here just said, this movie's got a great James Coburn, but it's also got Lucy Liu is actually very funny in this movie, very funny in this movie. And I think it was one of her breakout roles as her career was really taking off. So, you can't go wrong, I think, with Payback. I think it's one of those movies that often gets forgotten unless you're on a very specific line of discussion. And when you're talking gangster movies, it's not just about things like the mafia. I mean, you know, heist movies are very big with this because it's just about a gang of violent criminals, man.
Yeah.
And in the case of this movie, it's violent person after violent person. And Mel Gibson, I think it's one of my favorite Mel Gibson movies.
Yeah, Tom, where are you calling from tonight?
Pardon me?
Where are you calling from?
Schaumburg.
All right. Hey, Tom, thanks for the phone call. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, let's go to Tim. Tim, you're on WGN. Favorite gangster movie and why?
Hi, how you doing? How you doing tonight? I'm going to go with the King of New York, Christopher Walken, Lawrence Fishburne. It has a little bit of loyalty. It's got respect, even though they did a lot of bad things and some violence in it. They try to do a little bit of good with the money. And at the end, it kind of leaves you wondering, is he dead or did he get away? So a little suspense.
Blake, your thoughts.
All right.
This movie will turn 30 next year.
Wow.
It was directed by Abel Ferreira. I was actually just thinking about this movie this week because I think this is one of the peak Christopher Walken performances that really jumps out, especially, 1990, he'd already won an Oscar. He was known and respected as an actor, but I think this was one of the first movies that really just gave him a blank canvas and a wonderful supporting cast. Lawrence Fishburne, very much so. Wesley Snipes is in this movie. Steve Buscemi.
Wow.
It goes on and on. Yeah, this is a movie that I think you might be surprised if you've never heard of it because of how good the actors are in it. It's very, like, that turn when movies went from being 80s movies into 90s movies. I think this is one of the first big 90s movies that I remember seeing. And it's got all the best Walken stuff. You know, his vocal patterns, he dances in this movie. He's crazy, but he's also icy cool. It's just, layers. It's got layers, and I think it's worth revisiting. Tim, King of New York is an excellent pick.
And, Tim, I love that kind of neo-noir thing.
Yeah.
That's great stuff.
To me, if you watch it once, you'll want to watch it again.
Yeah. It's one of those
type movies.
Yeah, or if you're, like, flipping through and you happen to see it, it's like, all right, yeah, I'm stuck on that one. Tim, where are you calling from this evening?
I'm calling from Dayton, Ohio.
Dayton, Ohio. Shout out to Ohio for you. Tim, thanks for calling, okay? We appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.
312-981-7200. You can text it on in. You can call on in, whatever you want to do to be able to get your requests on in. Or request. That's a music thing. Your favorite gangster movies here with Blockbuster Blake. Got a texter, Donnie Bravo.
Brasco.
I believe Donnie Brasco with Al Pacino.
Well, the text says
Depp.
Bravo, so
Bravo.
I read it as I read what the texters say. Everybody, okay?
Totally fine. Autocorrect was not your friend there. if you're referring to Donnie Brasco, this is a movie about an undercover FBI agent played by Johnny Depp who has to go deep undercover within the New York mob. And the person that he becomes the closest to is a hitman played by Al Pacino. What isn't really planned is that he kind of starts to really enjoy that life more than he thought he would. And the whole, like, embedded nature of what he's doing starts to get muddled, and he starts questioning his loyalties while at the same time trying to maintain his cover. Because if he's going to do any kind of transitioning, he needs to make sure that, you know, his cover doesn't get blown and they just kill him right off the bat.
Mm-hmm.
So, but also another stellar cast. I mean, of course, Al Pacino, Johnny Depp, but Michael Madsen, Bruno Kirby, Anne Heche is in this movie. I think that this particular one, and it's directed by Mike Newell, who I'm a big fan of, and audiences might know from, I believe he did Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire. That's probably the biggest thing that American audiences would know outside of Donnie Brasco. But also, I believe he did Four Weddings and a Funeral, the original Four Weddings and a Funeral. And so, this is certainly one of those movies that it's a very character-driven drama, and I think that it's a pretty solid pick, honestly. And, yeah, and it's based off a true story. So, you know, it had a lot of source material to build from.
All right, we're going to go back to the phone lines. Carrie, you're on WGN. Where are you calling from tonight?
I'm in Sycamore, Illinois.
Sycamore. What do you got for us here? And what do I?
Well, it's kind of, you know, obvious, but Goodfellas. But my reason is because I love to cook, and the entire movie is based around cooking.
Yeah,
there's so many scenes where they cook. Like when they go to jail, they get the best meat, and there's a guy slicing the garlic with a razor blade. And my favorite part is when Ray Liotta is freaking out. All he cares about is stir the sauce, don't let the sauce burn, you know. So I love to cook, so it's a gangster movie that combines, and there's other stuff in there too. It's kind of based around cooking, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, there's also a lot of cooking. That theme kind of trails throughout Sopranos as well, which I really am a huge Sopranos guy. Blake Stubbs obviously can't go wrong with Goodfellas.
Never. And that's a Scorsese picture, so, you know, I think it goes without saying that the style and how Goodfellas is put together, there's a lot of moving camera elements to that film that help really make those scenes very kinetic. Obviously, the dinner in prison scene is a classic. I think you can just type Goodfellas dinner in YouTube anywhere, and it's going to pull that scene up. And it's kind of a masterclass in, you know, a little bit of storytelling, but also just kind of really making the audience feel something, because I don't know about you, but I got really hungry every time I watched it. So there you go.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But also, I think the again, going back to that style, showing off the sort of extravagance in the life of a gangster, because the whole thing about Henry is in Goodfellas is that he's all he could ever think about growing up was wanting to be one. Is that opening, you know, crane shot where it goes from out on the street all the way into the club, into the Copa, and then he ends up sitting at a table. And if you go back and watch that, I think it's one of the few, and there's a few other films like Boogie Nights and The Player, Touch of Evil, you know, these big long takes that kind of open a movie that just sort of take you from the idea of I'm going to sit down and watch a movie, and they transport you to wherever this movie takes place. And I would give Goodfellas high marks for that. Also, Thelma Shoemaker's editing on that film is just beyond spectacular. Hey. So if you want to really dig deep, I would highly recommend Goodfellas.
Kerry, thanks for the phone call.
Thanks.
Absolutely appreciate it. Had a lot of Goodfellas texts as well. We've got a few more texts coming in. Actually, plenty of them. We got Boondock Saints. I like Boondock Saints. I'm a big fan of that. We got Bronx Tale. And a Scarface is overrated text as well.
Well, there's two Scarfaces. So I'm going to guess it's De Palma's Scarface with Pacino from the 80s that's being discussed. Paul Mooney starred in Scarface, which was a film made in the 30s, I believe, and it was the basis for the Al Pacino Scarface. I think it's one of those that's tries to now be looked at more as style over substance because it's very... in its own little world. It's pretty surreal in terms of how gangster it gets at points, and hyper-violent as far as what is shown on camera versus some of the other films that we've been mentioning here. And again, the violence in a lot of these films is meant to jar you. In the case of Scarface, I think it's more shock value entertainment-oriented violence. But that's just sort of... Maybe that's a bigger discussion, but at the same time, Scarface is a movie I remember really liking when I was a teen, and I don't think I've watched it in over 10 years, so I'm gonna side with the caller on this. Say it's pretty overrated.
We got a
star from Brian De Palma's best.
Yeah, for sure. We got a text from Efrain and Pilsen. One of my favorite gangster movies is a black and white film from Germany with Peter Lorre called M. This movie is amazing. It explores the underworld of German gangsters, cops, detectives, and a serial child killer. Saw this movie when I was a kid, and it really scared me that there are people in this world that are capable of doing such things, and the movie was so ahead of its time, truly timeless. Yeah, I've seen M, and it is freaky. Yeah.
M, Fritz Lang's M. Now, Fritz Lang, audiences will know from Metropolis. That's one of his biggest films that I think more audience members out there right now have probably seen. But M is probably classified as one of the first true mainstream horror films because it scared audiences stiff in their seats. And this is back when you could put stuff on screen and really get away with it. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could plague the audience's mind with horror. And Peter Lorre in this particular film, Peter Lorre on camera in general, outstanding. Great, great presence to have. And I think that M is an interesting pick strictly because I've always heard it discussed more as like a mystery thriller horror film. But yeah, you're 100% correct. I think it falls into this category of like a great gangster style film of seeing that underbelly that I think up till this point in 1931 when the film was released wasn't really showcased on a mainstream level, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, movies weren't meant to scare audiences. They were meant to bring them to the theater and, you know, be a form of escapism. Yeah, this movie really hit people.
I think of that one shot of the young girl, I believe, bouncing the ball off the wall, and then all of a sudden you see the shadow with the gangster hat, you know, that the top hat, and you see him then talk to her before you've even seen what he looks like. And he's both equal parts frightening looking in a way, but also average guy that you'd expect to see just walking down the street. I think that's what makes it so terrifying.
Right. And again, it's so interesting to think about this movie using this storytelling style, right? This is something that's new in 1931. Imagine seeing that for the first time, whereas we see it now like almost all the time.
Right.
Or a variation thereof. We're almost desensitized.
Oh, I watch so much true crime and so much stuff that, but even that one, that still gets you.
I think if you ever have a chance to see M on a big screen, and I have not, but it is one of the films that I always keep my eye out for when, you know, specialty screenings with maybe a live orchestra or something playing the score, whatever it is, M is the type of film you want to be in a theater with a packed crowd and you want to be able to see, because I think you'll notice that a lot of the trends that you've seen growing up watching horror films, especially if you're a big horror fan, be it slashers or thrillers or whatever they are, M is sort of the basis for a lot of the techniques and how these stories are told. Absolutely. And it goes all the way back to 1931. Very cool pick.
Quick break. Blake, you mind hanging around just for a little bit longer? We got a few more texts coming in, okay?
Absolutely, yeah. Well,
Blockbuster Blake. We got to get you some homework. That's always the challenge. All right, quick break on WGN. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Ba-da-ba. It's Friday night, everyone. Hope you're having a great start to your weekend, or driving around, you're enjoying the show. Join the program too, 312-981-7200. Blockbuster Blake on for just a couple more minutes. Blake, James Dean's been dead for 60 years and he's going to be in a new movie. How the heck is that possible?
So, okay, there's a lot of questions about this, but this has been the headline this week. I read this and I thought, okay, I'm in. Let's hear this out. What's the deal? The
film. I only read the headlines, so you'll have to give me the meat and potatoes.
Okay, so the film is called Finding Jack, and it's going to be produced by a studio called Magic City Studio. This is a studio that has produced a few films. One of them was a South African entry for the Oscars in 2012. But other than that, a lot of their stuff hasn't had a lot of big theatrical releases. Allegedly, the people behind this company have purchased the rights to do a full recreation of James Dean. Now, when I say full, I mean CGI. Someone will do his voice, but they're going to bring this actor back from the dead. And they've cited a couple of very specific films where similar techniques have already been used. One of them is Furious 7, when after the passing of Paul Walker, they were able to digitally ensure that he had like a send-off in the franchise, so to speak. And then the other film was Rogue One, A Star Wars Story, where they recreated Peter Cushing. With an excellent actor who could do a very good Peter Cushing impression, essentially. And I don't mean to insult that actor's work because it was quite good, but digitally, they rebuilt Peter Cushing. The question, though, is that aside from buy some rights to use an image, there's been no demo from the effects houses that they're working with on this yet. There's a lot of questions about whether or not it's a publicity stunt. The director, one of the co-directors, his name is Anton Ernst, and he would assert that James Dean was the actor that they needed, so that's why they've gone down this route. Whereas I'm sitting here saying, of the thousands and thousands of actors out there who are trying to make it in this world, and many of them who have could probably fill this role, they've chosen to go this route. Now, John, I'm sure that when I would gladly eat any of the words that I'm saying right now, but if this film comes out and this looks really good, we could see potential for this type of thing to happen more often.
No.
However, again, like I said, there's a lot of questions I have about how this is going to really come about. Is this film going to actually happen? Do they abandon this James Dean thing halfway through and then cast an actor to play this part?
Yeah.
Like, what's going to happen here?
Yeah, I don't know.
And look, you know, you can go look up the studio. They have made films. They've made one with Jean-Claude Van Damme, Olga Kurylenko. They did have that film get some attention from the Academy. It also won an award, I believe, in a New York Film Festival. So, I mean, you know, these are filmmakers.
All right.
I'm not going to question the legitimacy of who these people are and what they do, but I have questions about how this is going to play out. So there you go.
All right, you got 10 seconds, and you can't even explain why. Your favorite gangster movie, what is it, Blake Stubbs?
Oh, it's Casino.
Okay, 100%. Yes, me too!
It's Casino.
Oh, it's so good.
It's an epic.
It is epic.
And I hope the Irishman just like it, honestly, right. In a lot of ways.
Blake, we love you. We'll talk to you soon. All right, buddy?
John. J-O-N, John.
What the heck is this?
John.
Did you do this?
John.
What is that?
I wish I had the mind to do this.
The heck?
But there is a man who sings. He's a YouTube channel, and it's called The Guy Who Sings Your Name Over and Over. And I looked up your theme song. So thank you to this man.
It's even spelled correctly.
Mm-hmm. John. There's a whole minute left.
How many views does this one have?
Close to 6,000. Not even kidding.
Is every song the same? Here, plug in Roger.
Where's? Yeah, I was just going to ask.
Because then, if it's the same thing, then
remember, no D in Roger.
Who would? What where the, would you put?
Wait,
you wouldn't believe how many people add a D to my name because it sounds like Rod.
I just got what you were saying, Mike.
Yeah.
I meant nothing of that. Oh, yeah, look at this.
He does seem to have a
Roger song. Is that Roger?
Roger. All right. It's about the same.
Roger.
He's saying Roger weird.
Spelled correctly.
R-O-G-E-R.
D.
R-O-G-E-R.
D.
Roger.
Is he saying Roger weird to anyone else,
no,
or is that just me? Roger. He's like really giving the jur a hard
one. Yeah.
Roger. R-O-G-E-R. Roger.
That's it, baby. Say my name. Don't wear it out.
How many views on this one?
Sadly, under 2,500.
Yeah.
Not as many Rogers.
All right. Well, you know what we got to do next. Cancel the station.
Wait, look up Farley Llewellyn.
Llewellyn. Look up Llewellyn.
How many does Michael got?
Let's see here real quick.
Yeah.
Oh, this.
Michael.
It's pretty much the same melody.
Well, yeah, Roger. He was going to write a whole new score.
I thought the more the syllables you have in your name, it might be different.
Michael. Let's wait for the spelling.
Michael. M-I-C-H-A-E-L.
That's correct.
Michael.
Who is this guy?
M-I-C-H-A-E-L.
D.
This is like when you get the specialized like name tags or coffee mugs.
Or the little plastic license plates that you put on the back of your bike.
Who's got a weird name? 312-981-7200.
Who can stump this guy?
Who can not? Yes. Who's got a name that this person doesn't sing to?
This is amazing.
Is it only guys' names?
No, it's everybody's name. Yeah, he has over 4 million views on his 19,000 subscribers.
Let's plug Stacy in.
Wow.
Let's get some ladies involved in this stuff. Let's see if we get Stacy in here. All right, here
this
we go.
This is hilarious.
Is it?
Yes.
This is what the show has resorted to.
I know.
By the way, it's John Hanson here on WGN for another hour, or until the boss calls and kicks me off earlier.
J-O-N.
No, A-N. Oh, you got it wrong, Roger.
What?
J-O-N.
Right. J-O-N.
A.
John. T-H.
Uh-huh.
A-N.
A-N. There we go.
John Uthen.
312-9.
Did he spell it that way? A-N?
What's that? Yeah, John Uthen. You spelled it O-N. No, yeah. Michael played John, J-O-N.
Oh.
I was surprised that I guess I'm not surprised it exists. It's certainly there. Mike, can I take this call yet or no?
I'm still looking up Stacy. There's a lot of different songs I'm rolling through. So yes, you can.
Yes. You're not scrolling alphabetically, right? You just plug it into a searcher.
I'm plugging it.
Can I take the call and see if we got that one?
Yeah.
All right, I just want to make sure. All right. On the phone lines, Dahlia, how are you doing this evening?
I'm good, thank you. How are you? My name never has anything. D-A-L-I-A, Dahlia.
So when you go to the gift shop or anything like that, you can't, you never get a chance to see Dahlia?
Nothing. I am robbed every time.
Ah, that makes me feel really sad, but I hopefully, Michael, you're scouring, you're looking for, right? How you feeling?
I am. I'm not.
Oh, no.
Dahlia.
Well, hold on. Guess what? We got it right here. Dahlia. I know. That's just me helping you out there. It's a gorgeous name, though, Dahlia.
Thank you.
It's
Lithuanian.
That's awesome. It's not that uncommon, right? I mean, I don't know.
Well, it's with the H. I think it's more popular with the H, D-A-H-L-I-A. But you don't even see that in the gift shop, actually.
Yeah. All right. Well, you stumped the guy. Thanks so much, Dahlia. We'll keep on scouring and see if we find something else, okay?
Thank you.
All right. Thanks so much for calling.
He doesn't just do names, though.
Are you looking at this guy now, too?
I think so. He doesn't just do names. There's some other unusual songs.
Okay.
He's got the mom song and the dad song.
Uh-huh. But don't start playing random stuff off the internet, Roger.
I'm not doing it.
I only trust Michael to do that.
I know.
I don't want to hear some Birds and the Bees song.
No, it's not one of those. It's the same guy. It's every one of them is a minute and 17 seconds.
All right. Mm-hmm. Let's go to Gifford. Gifford, do you ever find any coffee mugs or anything in your name at the gift shops? Oh, hold on. I got to turn the button on. All right, Gifford, do you ever find anything?
I don't think I've ever come across anything with my name on it, except as a last name, like Frank Gifford.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. Michael, any luck?
You know what? Gifford, I'm not seeing it, but I'm scouring it right now, because there's a lot of different pronunciations and spellings, so I'm trying to see if there is, like, a Gifford spelled differently.
Like a Gifford, perhaps? How else do you spell Gifford? Yeah, Gifford's I imagine that's kind of an unusual one, but I like that name. Did you like that name growing up, Gifford?
You know, it's my middle name.
Oh, wait, it's what's your first name? Let's search that one.
I got it.
Wait, what's your first name?
It's an easy one for that guy, probably. Dennis.
Dennis, hold on. I know, so you don't go, you're someone that preferred, how long did you start going with your middle name?
No, my dad went by his middle name.
Ah, okay. Well, we got Dennis for you. Well, if we looked at the birth certificate, we got it right. All right, thanks, Gifford. We appreciate the phone call.
Have a great night, guys.
You too. This guy, he probably makes a lot of money because of this.
You know, the funny thing is all of the videos have different photos of him, and in this one, the Dennis video, he's doing push-ups.
Yeah, I see that one.
Hey, look for Bunny. We got a text saying Bunny. B-U-N-N-Y. And you know what's interesting about this texter? My friend Bunny?
Yeah.
Bunny. There we go. Bunny. Well, let's see what the spelling is.
Different spelling.
B-U-N-N-Y. Well, I thought maybe it was B-U-N-N-I-E.
Like Bunny? That's like a type of food you can order, right?
But guess what? This person who's texting in, it's Melanie. She says, my friend Bunny is a guy.
Whoa.
Which I've never heard that for a That's guy's name. I haven't heard that very many times for a female's name, but a guy's name named Bunny. I don't know if that's a nickname or not. Oh, I see. It's Benny. Oh. No, I'm just kidding. No, it's still Bunny. No, that would have been funny, though. 312-981-7200. Try and stump the singing YouTube man who all he does is sing your name on 720 WGN. Let's find out how Xander. Let's see, make sure it's spelled right.
He's sniffing flowers in this photo.
Is he actually singing this live? X-A-N-D-E-R. Oh, we got it. It is Xander. Xander. Jeez. Xander. All right, another one. Do we have Carrie? Guy's name, like Cary Grant. C-A-R-Y.
Cary. Cary. Carrie.
Oh, that's new.
Carrie.
All right, spell it, dude.
C-A-R-R-I-E, Carrie.
Yeah. That's like, yeah.
No. Swing and a miss, buddy.
So there's moments in time in which I take stock in the human race and wonder what the hell we're doing with our lives. That guy, I don't know how he gets up out of bed every day, but he has 4 million YouTube views.
Mm-hmm.
That's incredible.
That translates into at least $4,000 by just doing a 1 minute song.
Okay. Well, that's actually not that much. You couldn't pay me $4,000 to sing every gosh darn name there is out there. Can you imagine? Every day just waking up. Because, I mean, it's only a minute or two long.
Yeah.
Boy, though, you got to do every one.
I think I could probably bang out at least 100 songs in an afternoon.
This is really to test this gift shop theory. Is there a Bort? Like from The Simpsons? Roger, you know that episode? Were you much of a Simpsons fan?
Bort?
Yes.
No.
Is that one of the greatest scenes.
It's one of the greatest. No.
Oh.
Bart can't find his name, but there's a Bort. And he's like, oh, who's named Bort? And then there's three people in the gift shop named Bort.
Oh, no.
So if anyone is trying to name every single person in the history of time is a joke, it's always like, is there a Bort? Okay. So the guy who sings your name over and over, do we have a Bort?
There is not a Bort song, sadly.
We should also just clarify, we're saying a Bort. We should put a big pause there, a thick pause, but instead of saying we're not looking for a Bort.
Oh.
A Bort.
A-B-O-R-T.
Yes. By the way, I got a tweet here. The guy who sings your name over and over again has announced plans. He's actually doing a personal album, and it is called There's More to Me Than Just Repeating Names. And I think that's some of the songs that Roger was alluding to, which I then found. So
yeah.
Roger, we'll refresh you here on Bort.
Look at all this great stuff, Reese. Cool, personalized plates. Barclay, Barry, Bert, Bort. Oh, come on, Bort? Mommy, Mommy, buy me a license plate.
No, come along, Bort.
Are you talking to me?
No, my son is also named Bort.
Who are all these characters?
That's really good
wow.
stuff.
Wow.
Solid audio. Where'd you find that? A tin can? Thanks, Mike. Real quality audio there for WGN Radio. 50,000 watts and you're playing me something. Was that off your cell phone? From 1994?
It was in the kitchen when it was playing in the front room.
Yeah, I needed to go back, record it, and then play it over again.
Yeah, record it on a phonograph that Edison made himself.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I went to the Edison Museum earlier this afternoon just for the specific reason.
Oh, we got one more request. Bob, B-O-B.
Ooh, that's a tough one.
Yeah, he's got to, like, really go slow, too, when he spells it. He's got to fill a lot of time here to get Bob, not a Robert, not a Bobby, not a Bort.
No Robert, no Bobby. You want specifically Bob.
Bob.
This is
he's
got
to have Bob.
Close as we got.
Billy Bob.
Billy Bob?
Billy Bob.
No.
Billy Bob.
He did Billy Bob and not Bob?
Billy Bob.
He's got Robert.
Billy Bob.
Billy Bob.
Billy Bob, Billy Bob, Billy Bob, Billy Bob, Billy Bob.
I don't know why I ever put any effort into producing something before this show goes on the air.
You know what?
Like, I have all these stories to get through, and it's like you played one stupid thing, and here we are 20 minutes later giggling like schoolgirls. This show, when I fill in it, or I guess not fill it, when I do these Friday night shows, I got the next couple weeks, too, we should just name it The Sleepover, because I feel like it's a bunch of 12-year-olds giggling. This can't be good radio. Please, 312-981-7200, because that's all this ends up, especially after midnight.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're all getting loopy. I've been up since 3 in the morning yesterday, and I'm just starting to get to my wit's end. And I'll just giggle for hours on anything.
Well, tell me if I'm wrong here, but when we're doing these shows, the best part is hearing the WGN listeners text us in their names and their best, and to see if we can stump them.
Right. What they actually don't know is we're data mining right now. And next he does social security numbers. So if you send us yours, we'll see if he reads it out loud on the air. Oh, hey, should we switch gears? I do have about 30 stories to get there. Oh, no, we got more texts.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Carrie. Carrie, C-A-R-R-I-E, says thank you.
Oh, you're welcome,
we
Carrie.
We got her on in there. Thank you, Carrie. We already got your name in there. 630. I just broke the screen. Great.
You know, we do have somebody who is in the studio right now who I think maybe would want his own.
Oh.
His own song.
I think I see him over there too. Let's go ahead and play it.
Dan.
Hey, Dan Long, everybody.
Dan.
Let's let him spell it once too, just in case. We want to make sure.
Dan.
Okay, go ahead and spell it, dude.
Dan.
No, we're letters. Dan. Come on.
Dan.
What are you?
Dan.
No.
Did he forget how to spell it?
Yes, he's stalling for time.
Dan.
He's like, oh, I've got to remember.
Dan.
There we go. All right, just to confirm, it wasn't two N's or a D-A-H-N.
Our great engineer, Dan Long.
This might be our last show. Boy, I hope none of this is copyrighted either. Otherwise, we played about 40 of this guy's songs. 312-981-7200, please get us off this. We're getting more phone calls about this. There is something satisfying about having someone sing your name. As we go through everyone else's, I'm kind of like, this is getting old. But, man, everyone wants to to hear their name played. So let's go. Let's get one more phone call in here before we, thank God, switch to something else. Craig, you're on WGN. How you doing? You want to hear your name sung beautifully, don't you?
Absolutely not.
So
I just want you guys to know, don't be so hard on yourselves, okay?
Okay.
Listen to this show isn't anywhere near as difficult as, say, listening to the Bears play.
Oh, hey, there we go. Thanks for the laughter there, Mike. Craig, you're absolutely right. It is better than the Bears, but not better than Hamp and OB after the Bears game, because that's some really good entertainment radio.
I could not go to bed at night without listening to OB blow a gasket and Hamp try to talk him off the edge.
Absolutely. All right, Craig, thanks for calling. We appreciate it.
All right, good morning, guys.
Yeah, good morning to you, too. Quick break, and then more on WGN. All right, Roger and Michael, this is my favorite part of our show, The Sleepover. The day's only 35 minutes old, but it's time to find out what we learned today. Shaking the cobwebs off. All right. Roger, you ready to learn some stuff?
Yes, I always am. You know that.
Michael, you ready to teach me and learn some stuff, too?
Yes, I am, John.
All right. So, I'm going to do this is out of Ohio. All right. Let's go back to 1895, if you will. Can you picture it? There's no.
I can. It's closer to my birthday than you two guys.
Like it was yesterday.
Yeah, milk is being churned, or that's butter that's churned.
Gas is being spread in Mattoon, Illinois.
Yes. There's cows. I don't know. I can't picture 1895 very well. Who's president?
Cobblestone streets.
Boy, did I learn I don't know anything about the 19th century. No. Okay. I'm just stalling as this loads on my computer. So, in the entire state of Ohio in 1895, there are a total of 2 cars that have been produced, sold, and distributed to the public. Only 2 vehicles. At this time, cars are for the ultra-rich. And guess what happened to those 2 cars? They crashed into each other.
Oh, but
no way.
Yes! The only 2 cars in the state of Ohio in 1895 crashed into each other. It's a story told in this book about the principles of theory and practice, and they talk about it. It's just fascinating. I don't want you to read the whole thing, but the headline is just good enough for you. So,
could you imagine that? They'd be like, on your left, what does that mean? Crash. Yes. We don't have roads yet.
Yes, exactly. Or they're just like, one starts in Dayton, the other's like in Cleveland. They're just driving, and they're like, oh my God, that's another one of me. Look at that. Let me get a closer look. And whack. Maybe they didn't check their blind spot because there was nothing to check, because you're like, there's not any car. I'm the only car. Why would I? I'm just changing lanes.
Who are these people?
Yeah, there would never be another car on the. Oh, what the?
I can imagine the power steering probably wasn't yes. what it was today back
right.
then, too.
And I imagine the horn would have been, oh God.
Hey, I'm driving here.
Yeah. Nice Ohio accent, Roger.
Thank you.
Yeah, watch out. So that's one thing I learned today. Michael?
That's so Ohio, too.
Oh, by the way, Tony in Arkansas. Arkansas, shout out. Thanks so much for listening.
Nice.
He learned something today. You want to know what he learned?
What?
You can make money on YouTube by singing names. Yes. Sure can. 4 million views.
Wow.
Thank you, Tony. Tony. Tony.
Tony.
From Arkansas.
You know, I think a barbershop quartet, you, me, Matt Bubala, and Raj.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
A little bit more money than that.
All right, let's try it. Tony.
Tony.
Bubala.
All right, what'd you learn, Michael?
All right, so today I learned a lot of great things, but the main thing that stuck out was I'm a huge fan of music, if you're not aware, and I learned that the song, one of my favorite songs, I Put a Spell on You, it's famous, covered far and wide. It was originally sung by Screamin' Jay Hawkins.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be a ballad, but during a recording sessions, Hawkins screamed and grunted through the whole song because he was drunk. And it ended up being one of the most successful recordings of all time, and is actually in the Hall of Fame's 500 songs that shaped rock and roll.
Nice.
He was just hammered when he did it?
He was hammered. And actually, I have a tiny clip so you can hear just a little bit of it really quick, because it's incredible, because I only know the song from what is the... And like the She and Him version and the ELO version, but it's like
I only know it from Hocus Pocus. So
Hocus Pocus, and it's like it was like a novelty song because he's coming out on the Merv Griffin show with a skull in his hand and in a cape.
What
he's
singing this.
Africa's born because you're mine. Oh, yeah.
So screaming and grunting was part of his thing.
So this is the recording of him when he was on Merv's show.
But okay. if you'd see the video, you'd see that I don't think that he is completely sober.
Right. You know, Bette Midler was hammered when she recorded in Hocus Pocus, too. So.
Really?
No.
Oh, I could tell. Oh. As one of the sisters?
I mean, maybe.
Is that a prerequisite to singing that song?
Yeah. I mean, maybe she was. I'm not. I don't know. But in case I get sued for slander.
If anybody goes back and sees these videos of Screamin' Jay Hawkins, I've been watching these for the last week or so. He was an incredible performer, but man, he was on something. Because it's just that kind of performance where it just captivates you.
Before we learn what Roger learned, for News at 10, watch WGN. Micah Matera, Joe Donlan, Dan Rohn, and Chicago's most trusted meteorologist, Tom Skilling. For TV News at 10, watch Chicago's very own WGN. All right, Roger, let's find out what you learned
today.
Well,
we're going to keep it in a musical vein.
Okay.
One of my favorite singers, and one of the most popular singers in the history of music in America, and probably around the world, is Elvis.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, we all remember Elvis kind of, you know, shaking his hips.
Oh, yeah.
Rocking and rolling. And he's got that slick backed black hair, all in a little pompadour.
But Roger's getting real.
But he didn't have
emotional
black hair. He
Wait,
didn't
what?
Have black
really?
Hair.
What? Wait.
Elvis had blonde hair.
Whoa.
He dyed his hair black when he was starting to become famous. But he had blondish hair. And when he got older, he started to let his regular hair color come out. It was kind of a brown, light tan hair color, but then some gray hair started popping in.
Oh, yeah, they'll
do that. And according to reports, when he was older, performing in Vegas and around the world, he started putting a little blue in the hair to keep the gray from showing.
Oh.
So our favorite dark-haired rock and roller.
Yeah, speak for
was
yourself.
Was a blondie.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
interesting. Yeah.
That is so crazy. Yeah, you know, it ties in because he was always, he had that great manager. What was it, Colonel Tom? And
Tom Parker.
I imagine that he probably gave him a little bit of insight into that as well.
Right.
Because there was a recent interview done on the Dave Plyer show with Debbie Harry of Blondie.
Yeah.
Blondie, the name of the band's Blondie, she's not a blonde woman.
Either.
No, she was a redhead.
I'll be a son of a gun. Yeah.
For most of her life.
Look Elvis, just think, if Elvis was still around today, best Just for Men spokesman ever.
Oh, gosh, yes.
By far.
Like,
yes.
Killed it.
Touch of Grey would be one of his songs.
You know, when I want to feel a little younger, I just use a little Men's Club. A little hair coloring for men.
Hold on. Did you forget the name of it, Roger, halfway through?
Well, because Men's Club is actually the hair club from...
Wait, what?
What is the product that...
Just for
hair,
Men.
Hair Club
for Men. Just for Men
just
is the
men.
Hair club.
Which is, by the way, the most misogynistic name ever.
Yeah.
Like, hey, Jay, lady. This is Just for
Don't
Men.
Don't touch that.
Like, it's just hair dye. Some poor woman is like, I would like to dye my... Oh, well, excuse me. This is Just for Men.
Nah. I've embraced
and
my
in the
grayness.
Me Too movement too. Come on,
is there a Just for Women?
There hair? Should be.
Yeah.
No, it's Clairol. The Clairol.
Wait a minute.
Boy, that landed. That landed like a dud. What is Clairol?
It's the hair coloring for women.
You know a lot about hair coloring for someone.
Well,
that
I've
doesn't...
got a daughter and a wife.
Oh, true.
Please, I
didn't mean to make.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I'm here all week. Thank you very much.
Can I delete that hockey off the screen, Link? It sounds like a bunch of cackling jackals. You're All right, anyways. All right, I'll do one more before we do a break.
Okay.
All right. Today I learned that, and I'll have you guys guess this, there's a percentage of United States youth who would not qualify for military service due to their health or physical appearance. Can you guess what percentage would not qualify? So if we were to, like, have a draft, or if they were to make everyone, like, try to enlist.
Right.
Obviously, you'd want as many as close to 100% if we needed our young men out there.
And this is today?
Yep, today. How many would not qualify?
At least 15%.
15%.
Oh, I go higher. I go 60%.
Yeah, 71%.
What?
Wow. Yes. Are not qualified due to their health, physical appearance, or physical appearance.
Physical
71% of the 34 million 17 to 24-year-olds would not qualify, mainly because of weight. Some are taking prescription drugs, ADHD apparently, any tattoos, so like that sort of stuff.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
All of Logan Square would be not even allowed to step foot into the office.
Yeah, no. The recruiters don't even, they're like, anywhere along that blue line, they're just like, you know what, just go right to the airport. That's where you'll find the next recruit.
Bypass into Cicero.
Only 1% of young people are both eligible and inclined to have conversation with the military about possible service.
Mm.
So close to Veterans Day. How dare you, young people. Quick commercial break, then we'll find out what else we learned here on WGN.
I'll have a blue Christmas without you.
Oh, blue hair, Elvis.
I'll be so
just for men. You can get it at the Walgreens.
Yeah.
Aisle 2.
Price check.
Okay. John Hansen here for another 11 minutes or so till Matt Bubala writes the ship that we call WGN. Although Bubala's not the best captain ever. I mean, like, we're going straight for the iceberg.
Yeah, right.
And then Bubala just,
he glances,
like,
off
he,
of it.
He, yeah. He saves us from total disaster. And then finally Orion comes in and just is like, I can just imagine Orion just going, like, if he's
shaking,
like,
his head, just going, like, I'm on, like, this boat with up, these guys.
Yeah, he's like, exactly. He's waking up and he's just like listening to us. He's like, I've been on this station for 60 some years for them to do this.
Poor Orion.
Well, he'll write the ship around 5. This is the sleepover on WGN.
You didn't hear his early years, though. It was just like
yes, it was. We will get a little. Bubala's pissed at me now. He's yelling at me outside. Yeah. Oh, come on. Bubala knows it, that he, you know. Anyways, I love Matt. All right.
We all do.
Let's find out what else we learned today. Okay. This one's interesting. So, you know how light travels through space pretty easily, unobstructed, of course, and it moves very, very fast. Sound moves fast, too, but sound doesn't move through empty space. Like, the noise doesn't stay as long. You can send waves of sound through the air, but the decibels don't register, if that makes any sense. Like, if you make a noise in space, that noise doesn't always transfer all the way through. But they've determined what the sun would sound like if sound could actually travel like that through space, and how loud it would be. So they say that if sound could travel through empty space, we'd be able to hear the sun all day long, at 125 decibels, which is louder than a train horn 3 feet away from your face.
Yikes.
Can you imagine? I'd be like, I'd rather not have life at all. Like, I mean, can you imagine a train horn blowing 24/7, 3 feet away from your face?
Well, you would have no hearing left.
Yeah, or something. Or I'm sure you would have adapted along the way to not have hearing, or to block that out in some way. But man, oh man, that'd be crazy.
Just, I don't know what to do.
We'll ask Mike Wall next week on What's Up with Space about that.
Oh, that'd be good.
Yeah, he'll be joining us next week. Michael, what else did you learn today?
I learned a lot of great stuff. For Mike Wall next week, do you remember what the show was called that we were creating, the movie? We have to think about that again.
Oh, Space Garbage Man or whatever that was, yes.
So today I learned a lot of great things.
This is all assuming we're on next week, so.
That's a good point.
Yeah, keep going.
We might have just lost the license on
this. Yes.
I'm kidding. This was a lot of fun tonight. There were a lot of, this is the most appropriate thing that I've been reading. A lot of the other stuff was, I don't think it's safe for radio. But today I learned that some whale's milk is so full of fat that it has the consistency of toothpaste. Can you believe this?
Those poor calves.
The blue whale itself is... Did you say poor calves?
Yes. Yes.
The blue whale itself
They're like, I'm trying. You know, squeeze the tube a little bit. Just to get that last bit out.
It's not too hard. Ooh.
Golly. Toothpaste?
Just imagine the baby whales. I'm full. I'm just like, the first drop.
You know what?
I'm good.
Mom, thanks, but.
Appreciate that a lot.
And I should say poor mother.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, the blue whale is so big. It's not only the biggest animal in the water.
Recorded history.
It's in recorded history.
Yes.
It's the most gigantic animal. I've never even... I can't even fathom the size of it, to be honest.
Well, picture a tub of toothpaste coming out of a whale's nipple and extrapolate from there.
Next time you go brush your teeth. Go ahead.
Oh, God.
Isn't it true that you can... Like, their artery system, their veins and stuff are the size of, like, a human arm.
Wow.
I think.
Jeez.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it passes through like corn syrup.
Actually, the blue whale is just made of a bunch of different types of food. Just Why don't you eat more?
Big, large, just,
Thanksgiving dinner.
Swimming through the ocean.
Jeez.
Roger, you learn anything else today?
Yes, I did. Okay, yeah. You know, over the last 24 hours, I've been checking on the Toy Hall of Fame.
Okay.
Because they just had a few more inductions.
Just in case? You just hit the refresh every few hours?
No, I was...
Come on, Slinky.
I was checking. They're in there. Slinky's in there.
Roger sends about 20 nominations.
Do you know that the stick is in there?
The stick?
The stick and a box are in the Toy Hall of Fame.
Whoa.
Yes.
Whoa.
You didn't know this?
The what in a box?
You got two individual items.
Okay.
The stick and then... The box. Two individual items that are on the Toy Hall of Fame. One of the items in the Toy Hall of Fame is the ever popular Barbie.
Oh, I thought you were going to say something else. Instead of stick in a box.
It's not a stick in a box. Stick.
So you really should put that one in, though. Timberlake killed it on that song. Roger, honestly, I thought you were trying to give us the censored version. And I'm like...
Oh, my God.
Okay. All right.
Wait, you learned that?
I hope everyone knows what we're saying. Actually, I hope they don't. Never mind.
Dick.
So someone nominated a box for the toy.
In the Toy Hall of Fame.
So I would assume then that all the rest of the toys that have ever been created are already in.
Not
and they're
all of
just
them.
No, they're just like, well, what else we got? That kid's got a stick. Wait, you're telling me a stick is in there?
A stick.
But not a pogo stick.
Right.
That takes construction and springs and rubber and jumping.
Right.
But a stick is in
there. Oh, but a stick can be so many things.
But you know, something of... We
it
have supplied
laser.
Nick DiGilio with all the content he needs next Friday morning.
For the next
That's it. 30 years.
30 years of content.
Till Nick retires, we've got it all covered. And there's nothing out of context about anything you've said, unfortunately. Although a box, nothing like, when you're a kid, seriously, when you're a young kid and you open a big present, I swear the box gets more usage than the toy.
Of course.
So maybe they got something that I didn't quite realize here.
Well, what I was trying to get at before I was...
That wasn't it?
No, I was saying, right? Trying to get to the Barbie, which is also on the list.
Well, you buried the lead, Ron.
Well, I was just leading up. All right.
So
Barbie's in the Toy Hall of Fame. Yeah. Did you know that Barbie is not Barbie's full name?
Oh, is it Barbara?
Well, Barbara, it was named after the inventor's daughter, Barbara. But there was a series of books that came out.
Uh-huh.
And Barbie got a full name.
Okay.
Barbara Millicent Roberts.
Barbara, huh?
Barbara Millicent Roberts.
Like B-A-R-B-A-R-A?
Correct.
So Barbie's
Have the guy seen that name.
Barbie's full name is Barbara?
Millicent Roberts. She has parents, George and Margaret Roberts, and they are from the fictional town of Willows, Wisconsin.
Oh.
Barbara, yeah. Bring it full circle.
Barb. Oh, yes. Let's see how he spells it.
Barb.
I thought it was Barbara. Just Barb?
Barb. There's no
Barbara, but there's a Barb?
There's a Barb.
See if they got stick. No, I'm just kidding. All right, we need to breathe here, everybody.
You know, I was going to say about the Toy Hall of Fame, if you think about it, the number like one and two toys have to be the box and the ball.
Are you getting really deep here?
No, like, I'm just saying, like, what other two toys have lasted the test of time? We're talking from caveman time.
Sure.
The box. Yeah. The ball.
Yeah, the ball's on the list,
too. And the stick made fire.
Ooh, and I got my weekly supply of Twizzlers.
Where did that come from?
Matt brings gifts.
Well, save it for Matt's show then, Ron.
He just threw it at me.
This is still the sleepover here.
Yes, I know.
Here to save us from ourselves, mm-hmm. entering the studio yeah. right now, is Mr. Matt Bubala. Please, yeah, there it is. Nice round of applause for Matt. What are you on, four there, Matt? All right, what do you got for us?
Where's my song, though, Michael? Where's Matt?
Oh, yeah.
M-A-T-T.
Mike's really quick today at pulling these up. It takes a little bit of time. Matt, how you doing?
Dude, you are in rare form tonight. Are you okay? I'm literally a little worried about you.
We were great until midnight, and then I don't know what happened after that. That's why I'm calling. I think the midnight hour is just the sleepover. Just a bunch of... here we go.
Thank you, Michael.
Matt, you're...
4 million views, Matt. Can you believe that?
Designated theme song.
M-A-T-T, Matt.
Hey.
M-A-T-T, Matt. Matt.
Oh, God.
I see us doing a show remote up at Ishnala and having that guy there. And just every listener that comes by.
Yeah, get yourself a new old-fashioned and yeah. Mm-hmm. Take a look at Mirror Lake.
Yeah, perfect.
Please tell me you're saying, you got to have something tonight to save us here.
No, we're going to continue with that. Because there's how many names left?
Yes.
It's unlimited, actually.
Yeah, so we're just going to keep going.
Good. That's all I got. I hope you got something, Matt. We have 15 more seconds to go. You want to tease one thing?
Yeah, we're going to talk to somebody from the Paris Zoo about this blob they have that has 720 sex organs.
Oh, four more seconds. Three, two.